Okay. Here we are, everybody.
Hey.
My brief career as a live streaming DJ just came to a crashing halt. just completely screwed up. And, yeah. So I guess that's just off the table.
Hey, man, it's okay. We forgive you. You do plenty already.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm still a little sick. I thought it was COVID, but it actually, you know, now that
monkeypox.
Now that I heard that fucking a monkey could transit.
I was frankly blown away. All these years, I thought that was safe.
You know, I heard that it's either someone fucked a monkey, or no joke. I'm not even kidding. That it was it was given to people by a rodent. So use your imagination.
At the Grand Canary
LGBT festival, how would a rodent give people the monkeypox? Just use your imagination.
Yes, because the thing is, it did. Now here's the thing: it's not just like diseases have jumped species from animals to humans before, just from handling livestock and stuff like that, just in perfectly natural ways. But this is like the funniest thing is that this was like just basically said, yeah, this actually came out of this gay orgy, basically, was where this came from. And of course, you know, the funny thing is the COVID brain people were on like hair trigger. As soon as something about a disease came out, it was like, oh, look, they're starting it up again. I was like, trust me, they're not. And we, if you look at what they're actually saying, what people in power are actually saying, they're saying like, this isn't anything. Don't panic, and definitely don't stop having gay sex.
Not close down the bathhouses. Like this is something.
They literally said that. Like we read a whole bunch of Twitter people on Twitter, like and Jews and like elite health officials and stuff like that were all saying the worst thing we could do in this situation, which would make the situation worse, would be to stigmatize the gay community and attack
Africans,
their institutions.
Yes.
Now, this is actually, I think, more gay than African.
The COVID brain people are right about one thing, which is that science has been replaced by scientism, which is a politicized anything that relies on either market forces or bureaucratic elements is going to be politicized. And the institution of science is no different.
Right.
What they get wrong is in how this is politicized. So
yes, they get the politics of it wrong. They fail to see.
So the COVID people are like, well, the number one agenda of the scientism, the science, evil science people in lab
it's
coats,
like creating socialism.
Yes, it's to create socialism. It's to take away my individual rights and
right. It's take away your rights. Get rid of capitalism.
Yeah. Yes, but then here's where they're wrong. So the way that politicization manifested itself was in the summer of 2020, when the entire scientific community went against its own COVID precautions to say that the health crisis of white supremacy and racism was way more important and deadly than COVID.
And that's something.
And thus all social distancing, all COVID precautions out the window,
For
a whole summer of mayhem.
Right.
Of mayhem. It was even protesting.
Yeah,
it was nihilistic, violent mayhem. They said, and that was the scientist. That was actually the first time that I've ever seen the people that pretend to be neutral scientists actually treat that shit like it's seriously. Because, you know, the whole like America's run by white supremacy, that shit has been around forever.
Yeah.
Like that narrative, Howard Zinn.
Yep.
You know, that's been around since the 1960s, possibly before that. What's different now is you have all these white people in precarious situations, white professionals in environments that are anti-white,
right,
where you don't get promotions or you don't get in the school, and they feel like they have to use their credentials in serious things like biology or, you know, like
they have to reiterate the narrative, or they're out.
Right.
They don't get to be in those situations anymore.
Right. And that's where the politicization of science really is seen.
And this is why, you know, everybody was talking about Fauci and he wants to destroy everyone's rights and all this crap. And then Jim Jordan, you know, who himself is no great brain, asked him, like, if he recommended, because he was recommending all kinds of stuff. Do you recommend shutting down the Black Lives Matter protesting? And Fauci was like, I'm not even sure I understand the question.
Right. So,
and because he can't answer the question,
can't say the truth.
Because if he says, it was sort of like he can't say, yes, you should. Even though if Jim Jordan was like, should we shut down like businesses? He would be like, yeah, you have to make sure people aren't gathering in big spaces together. But then he's like, well, we have all these political people out here wreaking havoc. Can we stop them? He's like, I don't know if that's even really something the government has the power to do.
Right.
And
right.
And you'll see
the same in this case, in that if Fauci goes out there and says,
this is not going to be COVID, just so everyone, this is
shut down the gay monkey orgies.
Well, he would be out so fast.
They would shut him down.
I mean, think about this. And this is what I even said. I said, one of the things that COVID brain people probably should have latched onto, which might have, you know, again, I don't think they should have, because I wouldn't want these things to get like reiterated or for them to actually start using the rhetoric and then buying into it, which would be like, start using gays in your, say like, you have to shut down this. But the thing is, the elite is very good at simply leaving carve outs for stuff that they want. And then they're fine being hypocritical. They're fine not being consistent.
Oh yeah.
Even on public health stuff.
Well, that's why no one takes them seriously.
But that's the problem, which is why the COVID brain people, I'm not totally unsympathetic to them.
They're not wrong in their criticism. They're just wrong in what they extrapolate.
Yeah.
From.
What they're, the politics that they, ultimately are based in their libertarian priors,
garbage. Yes,
rather than what your real assessment of what the government's about.
Right.
Whereas we look at what the government's really about, we're like, they're never going to shut down gay bathhouses.
No,
they simply won't do it.
And they will tell you. And if a government tries to do that, judges will step in.
It will be a huge problem. Yeah.
And there will be people out there on the right and the left saying, well, this isn't a violation of individual rights. This is un-Western. That's the new, by the way, like when people talk about first world versus third world, well, the United States is a developing country on a number of different metrics, from crime to education levels. It's a developing country. It's closer to Brazil than many parts of Europe.
Well, yeah, the United States most clusters of Europe. In that stuff closer
more
to Africa and like South America than it does to Europe.
I wouldn't say Africa, but definitely more like it overlaps more with Brazil.
Well, it's actually very similar to South Africa.
I wouldn't go that
far. In a lot of those metrics, it is.
But, you know, if you're going to talk about first world versus third world and say China is third world and America is first world, well, according to what metric?
Yeah, China's not third world anymore.
According to what metric? Or even Russia? You know, because if you're going to use third world as a code word for brown people, then America is like 55% white and Russia is 80% white. So it doesn't work there.
It does seem that third world is increasingly actually a code word for brown people.
Yeah, but it doesn't even accurately mean anything.
You can't then
because
say
the United
that
States
about,
would be third world under that metric
I
as
mean,
well.
And here we are. I mean,
so I think it's more so not for nothing. I think third world and first world, the distinction increasingly, if you're going to use like democracy indexes and all that pseudoscience.
Yeah.
It's just how much you tolerate fags. That seems to be far more important in whether you're considered first world or third world.
Well, that seems to be a good predictor of what the foreign policy stance of the United States toward your country will be.
That too. Yeah.
The only real exception would be some of those Gulf states, but they're working on it.
Yes. Well, they need them to fight for Israel. But
they also need them to stabilize energy markets when they disrupt Iran. They need them for a number of things.
But again,
they have no problem. Remember, they have no problem with the hypocrisy because the Iran is by all metrics, like in terms of actual democracy,
in terms
of the government being more responsive to the people, it's far more democratic than any of those countries. Yet it's always Iran that they're pointing the finger at. Well, that's because Iran is an oppositional state to Jews. And as we talked about when we talked about Jonathan Greenblatt's book, more so than we even knew how actually anti-Jewish the Iranian Revolution, how self-consciously anti-Jewish
it was.
I wasn't aware of that. Yeah.
Yes. And Jonathan Greenblatt is quite aware of it when he was talking about
how his wife is an Iranian Jew.
Didn't they take? I think there's a part in the book, if I'm not mistaken, where they tied some billionaire kike to a cannon, and they something like that happened.
I've got no comment on that. Just stepping over that one. Like, I mean, that's like the kind of shit that that's like the kind of stuff that like. You know, it was you heard about like that when they do it in like fictional stuff, or that you've heard about that they would do in like the old time wars and stuff, where they would tie people to cannons and just like blow them. That's really fucked up. That's really fucked up. Apparently, like that used to be done, and some Europeans would do that, but it became a big problem because people were like, "Yo, that's really messed up. Don't do that."
Right. Well, let's talk about the President of the United States like officially declaring war on China, and then unofficially joining mock military exercises against Iran while fighting a proxy war against Russia in Ukraine. So that's a three front war they're preparing for. I saw on Telegram there was an Azov battalion. Like one of those gore posters, Duke and Hunter, Telegram accounts. That's like Azov Battalion theme.
Who's even paying you to do that anymore?
And they posted that clip of Biden, like Biden standing up for the white race.
See, that's how I know that there's some disconnect between that stuff and the actual white nationalist community, here or in Europe.
That's like, shit straight out of like either Israel.
You can't,
or like.
Well, my question is, how well do you even know the community you're trying to influence and infiltrate? Because you're not going to get, other than one particular example, you're not going to get white nationalists that like Biden. There's one definite exception, although I don't think he's a white nationalist anymore, even. So it doesn't
matter.
But yeah, like it's just that's very tone deaf. Like you can't. You basically revealed to me that you're probably telling
the chicks the white man's back in town.
You know what it is? It's probably not a Jew or an American. It's probably just like a Ukrainian. Doesn't speak English very well.
It's probably
doesn't know what.
It's probably some. It's probably part of the Ukrainian information war operation, which has been a disaster. We've talked about this before. Yeah. It's actually not very good. They just don't. Here's how they win the information war.
It's bad.
Jews that support them control the internet and censor the whole thing. That's something that the Russians went to the some international cyber conference recently. Like, well, what's the point of having? Why do you tell us to keep an open and free internet when the United States controls 90% of the internet and doesn't allow any dissenting opinions on any topic? 90% of the internet is controlled by the U.S. government or its power.
Shuts down Russia Today, like, you know, just uses its power to. It's like, come on now. Like, this is the idea that Russia and China. Because I remember, like, early days, like going back 10, 15 years. There was a lot of talk about China and the internet and how
the great firewall
you couldn't get certain type of content. It's one thing to say like to do that, but it's like the United States says like other people can't get it either. Like we don't like your country's internet, so it's also then the question is also what type of material is actually being censored here,
right?
But like. It's not even whether or not China has a good policy or not. It's just like America has absolutely no leg to stand on here and is far worse. It's just worse. Yes. It's like worse in every metric. It's worse than all these countries. And you know what's funny is I've been thinking about the Ukraine thing and it was going as a slog for a while. It looks like things are starting to cascade towards a possibly Russian victory very soon.
Well,
this point is important though. You're gonna like this.
Go ahead.
The Russian in the economic war. Europe is getting screwed. Russia has come out way ahead. The ruble is very, very strong. In fact, the ruble is
strongest in years.
It's so strong, Russia is now selling its own. They've got some sanctions violating way that they're selling, they're buying U.S. dollars and euros for rubles in order to push down the price of the euro, of the ruble, because they don't. Too obviously, high. There's certain reasons why a country doesn't want their currency to get too strong too fast.
Yeah, because, export reasons.
Because it will make it impossible to export stuff. And And That's great. And so they're doing that. I don't know if that's true. I just heard rumors about that, but it could be true because it does seem like if you're the ruble is like below 60 now, if I'm not, or somewhere hovering around 60, yeah, which is like crazy.
That is insane.
Because when the war started, it was like 85.
Yep.
To a dollar. So it's gotten only stronger. And then additionally, then Western Europe is having big problems. And so I'm kind of wondering, like, at what point do these countries, Eastern European countries, like the Intermarium countries, at what point do they just like decide, like, oh, actually, we like Russia now because it's just got a better economy.
That's actually the secret to Russia defeating the United States for hearts and minds in Eastern Europe is not all this historical stuff that people talk about. You know, someone like Andrzej Duda, the president of Poland, you know, his part, law and justice, and this is what Anne Applebaum's book is all about. The Law and Justice Party's mandate in Poland is tied up with rejecting American values and the social values of the European Union. And yet now, during this conflict, he's actually going – it's hard to tell because of how censored Poland is.
Yeah.
But I think he's going against the will of the majority by deepening his ties. I mean, who needs Anne Applebaum when you have this guy going out there saying, oh, we will fight a world war for Ukraine. We will take in all the U.S. missiles. We want U.S. Buildups in Polish land. And that I don't know if that's
I wonder how actually popular want. It is. It would be hard to
how
gauge
popular is that? Here, but all of these – all of these Eastern European kind of right-wing populist types, they all got elected on opposing immigration, gay stuff, you know, anti-white stuff that's been filtered into their country by American and European NGOs. And now they seem to be kind of doubling – not doubling down, but sort of aggressively and ferociously – coming to the defense of those values. That's actually – let me tell you something. That's actually what Atlantis' values are. Now, you can agree with them. You can disagree with them. But you can fight for them or you can fight against them. But Atlantis' values are sodomy, liberal open markets, anti-whiteness, and mass immigration.
It's the gay disco.
Every Atlantis' institution will tell you that's what they define as Atlanticism. It's not choose your own Atlanticism where you got guys in pith helmets going around, you know, whipping, you know. No.
Yeah, you don't this get to – this is always the flaw. This is always the flaw in some of the sort of the pro-Ukraine stuff that was trying to trick people or fool people.
Right.
Maybe and maybe less experienced people or younger people, maybe some of them did that it's actually it can be like aristocrats and pickle halbs like beating Russian peasants or something. I don't know, or you know what I mean,
right?
Or some kind of old or actually just open like Nazism or something. Like it's not like you don't
you don't get to define it.
The issue it's defined by the people that run it, and what it really is like you don't get to close down gay bathhouses when there's a disease outbreak in your country.
That's another and if you do, you get hit with rule of law violations, which Poland and Hungary have.
Poland actually believe that they were put on hold because Poland's been a good boy.
Well, temporarily.
Yeah, they're on hold. They could come back.
As soon as the thing with – I mean, the only possible Polish interest in the war in Ukraine is what we were talking about before. If the United States does decide to give Western Ukraine to Poland, I mean, I know it sounds insane, but how far are they willing to take this in Europe?
It would be a very big departure from post-war policy. I think they have acknowledged, and at least there's probably a big fight going on amongst elites. Right now, hardliners versus more realist people. And by realist, I'm not talking about like Mearsheimer and Walt, but I do want to talk a little bit about. I mean, did you see that debate that they had?
No, I didn't.
Okay, they had a debate. Mearsheimer and Walt had a debate. We played some of it on TDS yesterday.
They usually see eye to eye on a lot of things.
No, they weren't debating each other. The two of them were debating two U.S. former U.S. diplomats.
Yeah.
One to Russia, one to Poland. And it was very funny because the U.S. the guy who was the former who was some guy named McFaul. Who was like a total buckboy, and then the Polish guy, like he had like a Polish accent.
McFaul is famous for when someone was debating him, he said, "Well, you know what? I'm not even going to debate you because I go around the world to my adoring fans and I got a big house." Well,
Stephen Walt basically shit tested him into saying like, he's like, so all those years when you were publicly saying Ukraine can join NATO, but privately saying that they can't, you were just like lying to everyone. He's like, yeah, of course.
He's like, that's what we do.
He's like, live in the real world. That's what we do. And he's like, okay, but then why should anybody, including the Russians, ever trust you? You just said you lie all the time. I would have even gone further and been like, why are we debating when you just told me you're a fucking liar? Like,
right.
You know, what's the point? And then after he says this, he goes into this spiel about like how, of course, we all want the war to end. There's just a difference of opinion about how that is going to happen. And then they were, of course, talking about what Lloyd Austin said, how the goal here is not to like win anything. It's just to like bleed Russia. And then, of course,
you saw that thing, right, where they had the conference with Lloyd Austin and they put all the Ukrainian flags upside down. They didn't know the right way to put them. Hang the Ukraine. Did you see that shit?
How much of his staff is black? I don't even know which one's the right way. What is it? Blue on top?
Let me show you.
Is it blue? Yeah, I think it's blue on top.
Right? Look at this. If you want, you know, you're going to you want to get a glimpse into the Pentagon.
Yeah.
They don't even know which way the Ukraine
is. That is funny. Well, maybe what they're doing, though, maybe they're signaling that Ukraine is in distress.
Oh,
because when you hang a flag upside down,
this is what I mean. This is actually
So wait, is that Millie? Who's that?
Yes, that's Millie and Austin.
This is like it's like the butt goy. It's like nigger and butt goy.
It's lethal weapon. It's a lethal weapon. The Pentagon's lethal weapon.
Except it's like except they don't actually succeed.
This is like a buddy cop movie here. But with all the whimsicalness of one.
Yes.
And you know, this is increasingly part of my worldview, is that, you know, we kind of assume that there's all these like geniuses running Zog, but actually these are a bunch of people that there's something called imposter's syndrome. And that is the feeling that you are in a position despite really not being qualified for it. And a lot of this stuff where they go off, like
women,
you know,
achieve this, women have this a lot in certain high-powered
situations
because they don't feel like they belong.
It's been studied. It's actually people that are in classes that benefit from affirmative action that feel this way the most. And that's why they tend to cope with that with, you know, calling everything white supremacy and calling everyone racist and
things like that. That's
actually a reaction to that. And how much of our institutions, not just the Pentagon, but the scientific community and all of that, are arrested by this imposter syndrome, people that are not qualified to do this sensitive work. Like, that can't even get the Ukrainian. They don't even know how the Ukrainian flag is supposed to go up.
They didn't even think to look. Right? Like, that's the other thing. It's not. It wouldn't have been hard to find out.
No.
Just do an internet search.
Yeah.
Look, you just literally ask if I confess I was guessing it when I
look at the
on
pin
top,
on but your jacket. The pin you put on your jacket. Is it?
Yeah. Just look at whatever other crap you got. Like, that's Ukrainian. Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean,
maybe it could even be like there. Maybe there's some like woman that thought like, oh, it looks better like that, like the yellow upside better, like not realizing.
Oh, man. that would be an over-rational. They just don't know how to hang the Ukrainian flag. How would they know how to resolve this crisis?
But why'd they hang them all? But it's funny how they got them all wrong. It would have been funnier if they got like some right and some wrong. But that's the thing.
They could at least say it was just a blunder, one little mistake, but they got them all wrong. It's pretty embarrassing.
They kind of all go the same way. I mean, that you can't really, you know.
Yes. But like, there's actually no good explanation for this other than the fact that people in
don't know what they're doing.
The world empire don't know that are fighting a proxy war on behalf of this country do not know what the flag looks like. No. Like that's the only explanation here. Despite seeing it tons. I mean, you would assume someone would notice.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the Ukrainians did, but yeah, even myself, I didn't, you couldn't, if you asked me on the spot, like, I didn't know right away when you said, and then I was like, I think it's blue on top, and I was right.
Yeah.
Just because I remember now everything I've seen for the last, you know, however many years I've been seeing this crap.
Yes.
But yeah, that is funny.
it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing, and it makes you question anything else they tell you. Like, you know, the idea, again, what I always say to people that like say that the war is... Yeah, go ahead.
Lloyd Austin being black. Let's look at General Milley. Like, do you think this guy could lead men into battle?
I don't know. Do you think this guy?
I mean, I don't know. Like, does he have any known? I mean, a lot of these generals. What's funny is like they're guys that were advanced up for probably political reasons, but a lot of them at least have like one battle under their belt that they commanded.
Trump had a few guys like that, right. Like Mad Dog and Jesse. Right. Like, what's his name?
Well, there's McMaster and then,
Joseph Dunn. I think was another one. He actually.
There was Mattis, who actually did command in Iraq.
Right.
Although a lot of people don't like him. Like, a lot of guys, a lot of troops don't like him. They say he's a fag and a piece of shit, which is probably all true. But then there was the guy McMaster, who was the chief of staff, I believe, at one point for Trump. He's also out there, though, saying, like, absolutely, Ukraine can win. Just give him more weapons. At least he was saying that a few months ago. I haven't checked in. But, like... General Milley's the one that was talking about white supremacy and white privilege and all that shit. And if you remember that, and I'm just like, what battle? Like, do you even have one? Because it feels like what they do with these generals is that they give them, like, in the engagements that the United States was involved in, they give them like one battle, right? So they at least have like one real one under their belt. Like, it, you know, even if they're small, like there's like some engagement in Iraq or Afghanistan, just so they can at least be like, I did this. I won a victory at this. It's like, you won a victory with like, you know, overwhelming, every single technological advantage you could have. And then like, none of these people have ever, like the last general that actually won a real battle was probably Schwarzkopf in that, giant tank battle in Iraq in 1991.
Yes.
That's it. That's the last, which is the biggest tank battle the United States ever engaged in. However, they still had a major advantage there. But that was like the last real actual fight. But other than that, it's all fake. It's all just like we're bombing peasants. We're bombing tribesmen, like hill tribesmen. In like these, you know, in these tribal Arab and Afghani countries and stuff. So I don't know. It's just, it just, you can't take these people seriously. You just can't. Like, I can't. How many fucking where'd you earn all those decorations,
guys? Yeah, what's that on your jacket?
Did
you order those off eBay? Like,
where did that shit come from?
Like, do you wear those to get free Starbucks? Like, you know, stolen valor, as they say.
Right.
I mean, I think America at this point is the leadership class of this country is just they're just waiting to get I don't know. What are they waiting for? Are they waiting for a world war to bail them out to become relevant again, to unite the country?
The problem is that they can't. I mean, this was the theme of yesterday's Tedious as well, is going over and it was also the theme of FTN. Jazz Hands and Warren were also hitting on this exact same topic on Sunday.
Yeah.
What can these people do?
Yeah.
And the reaction to the of course the reaction to the mass shooting in Buffalo just like reified this whole thing, right? Like there's no reason for anyone to buy into this country.
They can't
bring people together. Like Jazz Hands made the point. He's like, look, there was probably a time when the majority of white people in America would have looked at that mass shooting and said, that's a real, that guy's a psycho. Yeah. That guy's sick. That's a terrible crime. We hate that guy.
Yeah.
That's awful that you did that. How dare you, you piece of shit. And being like actually morally, truly, deeply morally outraged by what happened.
Yes.
But in order to get white people to respond to that, you need to actually have law and order in the streets.
Yes.
You cannot have a constant black crime. You cannot have like watch any local news station in America.
Well, one thing I'll say is that even white liberals, their outrage was a bit more muted than it was before.
They immediately jumped into the politics of it. Like they jumped right in.
Well, hold on. I think there's actually a split among white liberals about this, where you have certain people in certain institutions that immediately politicize this, right? Yeah. I mean, there was a mass shooting, I believe, last year one of many that never gets talked about in a church, and it was done by an illegal alien. You didn't see Republicans or conservative politicize that.
No.
So part of it is a lack of politicization on the right, the lack of using these things as opportunities.
Us for politicizing right. Waukesha.
Yes. Now, with that said, though, one thing you do see a little more of among liberals, though, is that they're actually talking more about mental illness now for to explain these mass shootings. Now, the Wall Street Journal is considered the Republican. It's really just a 90s centrist newspaper, right?
Yeah, it's represents not even really that Republican.
It represents business interests and so on.
Yeah.
They made the Buffalo shooting about mental illness, and that's kind of controversial because usually what typically happens is when you bring that up, you get the piranhas attacking you for white supremacists
trying to excuse whites. Yeah.
But this time it seems to be sticking, actually. And one of the big problems in America, this is actually a quiet, silent issue. And it goes back to the idea that science and medicine are being used to violate people's individual rights. Well, when it comes to mental illness, that's not really true. So the libertarian movement is actually – libertarian Republicans. This happened under Reagan, were the ones that really took the 1960s radicals who wanted to abolish mental institutions and institutionalizing legit, dangerous, crazy people, right? So right. Now we have a – they used to call it the snake pit of institutions, right? So thanks to the work of both the 60s Judeo left and 80s Reagan conservatives who both emphasize the rights of crazy
groups
people.
That are closer than you might think.
They're much closer than you might think.
Yeah.
And so what happened was that they made it virtually impossible – to institutionalize someone who is a danger to others. So this is what's interesting. If you express suicidal ideas, like you're a danger to yourself, they actually do institutionalize you. They take you to the hospital and they check you, they put you on watch.
Yeah.
They'll tie you up if they have to.
Yeah, they'll put you in restraints or they'll make sure you can't do it. Yeah.
But if you're a demonstrated threat to the safety and lives of other people,
you get a whole host of secondary rights that kick in.
Yeah.
Above and beyond those.
So that goes
people.
To show you that obviously the system is not out to – the medical establishment is not out to violate people's individual rights unless it's in certain circumstances. So in the case of the mentally insane, because part of it is just black crime, yes. But the mental illness is at the very least a compounding factor. The fact that we can't put mentally psychotic niggers in prison.
One of the race also confirms the mental illness thing because blacks are also significantly more mentally ill.
Right.
Generally speaking. I mean, look, it's just the facts. And in fact,
and that's why, by the way, they're hesitant to apply public safety measures like putting demonstrably violently criminally insane people away.
Right. I mean,
it's
like
because many of them are black.
Well, and when they're black, they also don't – a lot of times a white person with mental illness, at least it used to be – I mean this is also all unraveling. You know, their families would kind of secret them away.
Yeah.
You know, hide them away so that they couldn't – like in To Kill a Mockingbird, right. Boo Radley was always up in the attic. Kept them away from everyone else. Right? But blacks don't do that, right? Black people don't really do that. They don't take care of their families like that.
No.
So a black person that's schizophrenic is out in the street just hallucinating and attacking people and
Yeah, I mean, but the problem they're having whipping up outrage over the Buffalo shooting is that the day after or 2 days after they shoot this gay banker from Goldman Sachs on the train. So did you heard about this, right?
Yeah.
It happened yesterday. So this is a gay man at 11 o'clock in the morning in New York City takes the subway. He's a gay Goldman Sachs banker going to brunch. No, he wasn't. He had a Spanish name. I don't know what race he is. But anyway, this guy was going to see his other gay friends for brunch, taking the subway.
This.
Yeah. And a black guy pulls out a gun and shoots him in the face at random. Now, there's two explanations. So this guy was pretty white looking, you know, at least, you know, black people think everyone's white. So this could have been retaliation for the Buffalo shooting. That's one option. Another option is this is just a psychotic person. I mean, this black guy has a very long and storied criminal record, 13 convictions for half of them are felonies. He's a member of like three street gangs. He just walked up.
Well, that's the guy. So he does look pretty white.
Yes.
Yes. This is the fucking.
Dude,
come on now. I mean, just imagine setting your whole political life and identity around like protecting people like this, particularly when you yourself, if you saw this guy, I mean, eventually it has to get to liberals. Like, would you want to see that guy? Would you want that guy walking onto the train car that you're on? Would you want to be the only guy in the train car with him? Would you want to meet him would you want to meet him ever? Ever. But never mind after dark.
But that's the thing, is that like kind of working class white people have all left the places these people are running loose. So what's left are the actual libtards
and then like super
you need that appear to be getting shit tested. I mean, I read the other day that at Fordham in the Bronx. So anyone that doesn't know, Fordham is actually a very prestigious,
pretty good school. Yeah,
it's a prestigious school in the Bronx. It's in the Bronx, though.
Yes, it's in the Bronx. Yes.
And so a dude who's like a 3 times convicted sex offender, a black guy, kidnapped a woman, a 28-year-old woman, presumably a student at Fordham, and raped her for 5 days straight in an abandoned building.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So this is actually happening. The people that are getting burned by this are the very same people in these institutions that say white supremacy is the bigger health threat, or that say we need more equity at your job and university. Those are the people that are actually being impacted by this crime and violence, which is why the reaction to the Buffalo shooting was actually much, much, much less than what I think even the Jews at the ADL thought it would be. I mean, they did pass that ridiculous domestic terrorism thing in the Congress, but
in the not in the Senate.
And it's not going to.
No, it's not going to. Every Republican voted again. But this is another mistake that they made. Like I was talking with Warren about this, where we were like, what a better move would have been to try and like completely isolate actual white nationalism,
right?
Like target, but they didn't. And that bill is old. That wasn't a new bill. It was old.
It's waiting to be passed.
And it had been introduced, but then the thing was, it wasn't even really waiting to be passed. It was a hyper politicized bill from a bought in libtard. Like it was a libtarded Democrat in Congress that introduced it, and it was all basically just like making conservatism illegal.
Yes.
Was what it was trying to do, which is stupid. Right. Like, it's fucking retarded to do that. And so, of course, like, that's why it's sort of funny, because it's like, wow, they didn't actually manage to get some new domestic surveillance or internet surveillance package through, or some new powers or something like that. No, because this is the other problem.
Yeah.
One of the reasons these people are ineffective is because they're so ideological, they can't see the real world. Like, whoever it was that introduced that bill, if you went to them or like, listen, the stability of this country requires there to be an opposition party that is conservative, and for them to have the you literally are so butthurt.
Yes.
About like Donald Trump in January 6th
and Tucker,
you want to just make it illegal.
And they're already talking about, the FBI should be watching Tucker Carlson and seeing if they get him on something.
This Jew a former Fox News correspondent was saying that. This guy, Cameron, I looked it up because I was like, Cameron. I looked it up. It's not really his name. He's got some really Jewy Eastern European name that he changed it to Cameron when he came to America. But yeah, so I looked that guy up when I saw him say that. Like, sure enough, he's a Jew. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, when you see that guy being the dominant narrative on, you know, on the CNN, which used to be a semi-serious news channel, at least as serious as the BBC would be or something, when you see them talking about the rival news anchor going to prison,
I mean
that's outrageous.
So here it is, Carl Cameron.
That's yeah. un-American in even the most fundamental sense. Yeah.
So yeah, former Fox correspondent says police will have to start monitoring. This is also like, yeah. do you not understand this? I figured this was probably a Jew just because of not even lip service to the First Amendment. It doesn't even come into play here. That like you can't. This is a guy who's saying stuff, and the police theoretically just can't do anything about it to prevent him from lying on air. Now he's not. It's not lies. Now I think Tucker Carlson's a great replacement. I would be like, can we have the police go after Tucker Carlson for like not for making it about the Republican Party voting demographics?
Actually, like it's actually not hard to just beat Tucker in an argument because his argument is designed to fail.
Right, but the problem is you can only beat him if you're us. You can't beat him if you're them.
Well, they could just
They could
defeat Tucker's argument about our view of the great replacement is that it's just going to that America is now a third world country. Right. Tucker's argument is that America is a third world country because Republicans can't win elections, which is wrong.
That's not true, though.
It's wrong in every sense, but
it's also there's another point which we've made on this show. And I made it again last week when we were talking about this great replacement stuff, is that you know that it's not even what they want to do. Like there's even – it's not even like – because you'll get sometimes certain conservative figures that buy into this or say they buy into it that show like, oh, look, increasing numbers of like Mexicans or Mestinks are voting South Americans are voting Republican. So, oops, looks like the Democrats messed up. And it's as if it's like that's all that matters to them.
Right.
But the thing is, then you also have the issue where they say they won't say the great replacement is getting rid of whites. They won't say it's about white people at all. They won't point to the diminishing white share of the country's demographics. But then they will do like ridiculous racial gerrymandering and voter suppression rules in order to make sure that the party shake up the breakdown of the parties in Congress remains roughly equivalent with a few places where it
and
switches each.
You're going to see it in places like Georgia. Right.
Yeah, exactly right. That's what I was saying. So we have it. What the Republican Party really does, they're not even trying to like represent whites in any way. It's like they're taking their votes. They're not representing them. They're doing the opposite. They're telling them they're stupid. And then they're doing just like racial gerrymandering to keep it going. So the system itself
and the whole system prefers gerrymandering,
stopping the gerrymandering, right?
They prefer gerrymandering over populism,
right?
Every damn time. Yes. I mean that they because the Republicans have two choices: you either lean into the white vote, or you just gerrymander the districts so
and
you
they,
don't
they chose election. The latter.
And they have all come to a private agreement, even if Democrats will fundraise off the issue and complain that it's racist, it doesn't have any impact because they've come together behind closed doors.
Does it anyway. That's the point. It's
and
like they,
made an agreement. Yes, exactly. That they will gerrymander the district so that they don't have to have an appealing – make an electoral appeal.
Right. So it's clear that what the system wants is – a viable Republican Party and white replacement.
Yes.
It wants both. And they are able to pull enough levers to get that outcome for a while. But by the time they won't be able to get that outcome, like the country will just be at the end of its freaking rope anyway.
Right.
So it's like whatever, right?
Well, you know, people say a Republican can't win in California. Well, there's some Asian guy that's running for a state comptroller position. And he actually – his chances of winning this statewide race aren't zero, and he's a Republican. So they can win, actually. If they get enough of the Asian vote and Mexican vote, Republicans can win even in California, especially if the Democrats do a really awful – like, I mean, they're doing bad even by the low standards people have for California. Yeah. So, yeah.
They'll probably also they'll probably also in the course of doing it, like attack the Democrats as being like privileged, out of touch, rich white people.
So we also, by the way, have another fake canceled Jew, Joshua Katz. Have you seen this?
I did a whole thing on this last week. Yeah. It's total bullshit. I mean, you can go into it if you want. I talked about this. I can't remember. Was it on? I think on Friday's Tedious. I did a whole thing on this.
Yeah.
And I had just seen it that day. Like I was just browsing through the news and I saw the article come up about like Princeton professor canceled. I was like, let me look into this. And I was like, oh, I see what's going on here. This is like a like Brett Weinstein all over again.
Yes, if you already did the content, that's fine. But you know, this goes.
I hear what you have to say about it, though.
Yeah. Well, my point of view on this is that it shows you what happens. This is going to be part of the DeSantis movement.
Yes,
this is all going to come together at some point in a fake Ronald Reagan style resurgence. It's going to fail because I don't think they have a fucking leg to stand on here.
The funny thing is the libtards at Princeton actually had Katz's number correct when they said, you're obviously just positioning yourself to be a culture warrior here.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, on its face, like what they did to that guy was fucked up, but it's also, but why is it that, He's the only one. I also was saying, I'll bet you that increasingly when you hear about something like professor like writes letter or writes article and gets in trouble or something, it's going to be a Jew just because the few whites left at these institutions just totally keep their head down.
Yeah, they don't have the courage because to do it because they don't have anyone backing them up.
Well, because they know that.
I guarantee you, I know academics. We know academics behind the scenes that agree with us 100%. And if they were to come out publicly,
if they said what Kat said,
no one would fucking back.
First of all, what Kat said wasn't even that extreme. He's basically said he agreed with like 90% of what they were wanted, but there was a few things that were overboard. And of course, they went into some
framing
crazy,
it in terms of individual rights.
They went into some crazy ideological. Well, he actually made one point that was funny, which is that he was saying like the blacks, there's something called like the Black Justice League at Princeton. Literally, it's called the Black Justice League. And they were demanding.
I swear to God, they probably named themselves after Cape Shit on purpose.
No, I'm sure that they did.
I fucking guarantee.
I'm sure that they did. And so they were demanding that like junior faculty of color.
Yeah.
Should have like more vacation time and have to teach fewer courses and get paid more. And he was like, that's fucking retarded, basically.
Well,
and
he said they're doing that they're doing that in New York State. The, you know what the regents are, right?
Yes, yes.
The New York regents. Well, they're not going to have New York regents this year after Buffalo. They said that the New York regents exacerbates racial inequality.
That's funny.
And they said that in response to the Buffalo trauma, there's not going to be your.
Niggas don't have to take. They don't have to take tests.
No,
they don't have to take their tests. Yeah,
that's what. Anytime some random shit happens in the news, like blacks are like, yo, I don't want to take no tests.
Well, that's what's funny.
I don't want to do my homework.
But these weren't students. These were like the adjunct faculty, the associate professors, the junior faculty were saying we shouldn't have to teach.
Right.
They weren't even. We should have to teach our classes. Yeah. And then they were saying, and also we should get like more, we should get double sabbatical time. In other words, you get double vacation. This is not, if you're not doing education, if you're not doing research, it's not a sabbatical, right? Like you're supposed to do research on on a sabbatical.
They probably don't know that.
Because no one expects them to do anything. So,
or they could just say, I've been doing research man in America.
Well, they could say I was doing my research on my sabbatical, but I saw a black person get beat by the cops, and now I'm traumatized, so I can't do it. But so what Katz said was like, it's pretty ridiculous to try and redress the issue of white privilege by giving like more privileges to already super privileged people, whatever their color.
Right.
And that's an obvious truth that if you are on the faculty at Princeton, you're already like you're like a hyper privileged person. So like, what do you need more privileges for? Right. Of course, he's racist and there's a legacy of colonialism and blah, 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 all that crap. Right. All that stupid shit.
Yeah.
But and of course, that stuff is retarded and it's repugnant and it makes people like if I didn't know better, like if I was the me of 10, 15 years ago, I would have rallied right to Dr. Katz's side and be like, this guy's absolutely right. Like this is bullshit, you know.
Let me break some news here. So apparently, look at this. 14 children killed in an elementary school in Texas by an illegal alien that was before having a shootout with Border Patrol agents.
This is today.
This is just now. Yes. 14 children in a school in Texas killed.
Holy shit.
That's insane. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so this is the Daily Mail. As many as 14 elementary school kids are killed. This is after Texas gunman barricaded himself inside school during shootout with Border Patrol. Shooter 18 is killed by cops. This, I think, is going to generate
more than
a little bit more fucking outrage.
Oh, yeah.
Uvalde Memorial Hospital confirmed that two children were brought in dead on arrival, that they were treating several more following a shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde. A gunman allegedly opened fire at an elementary school after he exchanged gunfire with Border Patrol agents and barricaded himself in the school, sending the campus into lockdown. His arrest, the suspect exchanged gunfire with Border Patrol agents before barricading himself in the school. Uvalde Memorial Hospital said they were currently caring for several students in the ER and asked family of injured students to report to the hospital. Tuesday afternoon, gunman was... This is just the talking for the points.
Yeah.
This is crazy. So,
that's bad.
So he's exchanging... So there's only one reason why you'd be exchanging gunfire with Border Patrol agents.
Right. It's because he just got into the country.
Because they were trying to stop him or something. Or deport him. Or is this maybe like... People are going to be like, this is cartels or something like that. I mean, maybe there's some connection there, but I don't know. It's somebody who shouldn't have been here. And this
how do you get in through the border of the United States of America to commit a crime like this?
You walk across.
Right, exactly.
You just walk across as a brown person. I mean,
yes,
there's some obstacles, but here's like some video.
There's like that wall, like the fence that like they just get over. But
yeah. It's probably a pretty, I mean, knowing Texas, it's probably a pretty mixed school. There's probably whites.
Mexicans, probably a minority. Blacks. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the dead are going to be Mexican. It doesn't matter. Like,
it doesn't matter. It's still wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still just like, why? Yeah. I mean, you already look at these are the people milling around. It looks like, so it looks like a lot of beaners. But still, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah, 14 children killed.
Also shows you like so much for racial solidarity.
Oh yeah, forget about that.
Uvalde Memorial Hospital information at this time is that active shooter at Robb Elementary is in custody. UMH is caring for several students in the ER. Immediate family of those students reports to the cafeteria on the second floor. Yeah. This is crazy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what other, someone at Border Patrol, I mean, I don't think this is definitely not a white person.
Well, there seems to be a picture here. Well, why would a white supremacist like engage in, maybe it was like an Antifa, but I don't know if it's an Antifa. No. This is like you see that right there.
I'm just saying, man, I think that, I'm not going to make this about mental illness. Everyone should politicize this however they want, but I think that, you see things like the, the Batman shooter from years ago, right? Let's say, like, this mass shooting stuff really started to hit a stride around 2013 and 14. So, like, if we lived in an objective, non-politicized environment, we could actually start looking at what was going on from, say, 2010 to 2015, what kind of drugs are young people being prescribed, what kind of social changes are happening that is causing people to go and do shit like this. I mean, remember the Sandy Hook shooting?
Yeah.
These things all – this is – these things were happening before the novel thing of, like, people that want attention doing it and saying – copying the Brent Tarrant manifesto and putting it out there.
I would say that by the time we got to the Batman shooter, we were in the territory of attention. And it was before there was a political angle. When there was a mass shooting, it was never – it was not – people wondered about the race.
Yes.
Although the wondering about the race stuff really didn't start, I would say, for me at least, until like the mid – maybe early to mid tens. Before that, it was just like the Batman shooter was in 2008. And that one would never occurred to me that it was political. It was always obviously this guy is mentally ill, clearly, but also is doing it like for attention.
Yes.
And that was the thing that was going – that was kind of like the aughts. And even it started, I guess, with like Columbine. There was more going on in Columbine than we initially thought. Where there was seeming to be possibly a racial grievance there, but I don't know for sure.
Right.
But anyway, I don't know. There's a picture here of what appears to be I don't know. You can't tell at all what the race is in that picture. No. It could be any race.
It's unlikely that it's white.
It's highly unlikely it's a white person because. But here's my one thing. There possibly is a mental illness thing here, even despite everything, because if you are running from the Border Patrol or any law enforcement, you run into a school, you would take hostages rather than just shoot the place up, you would think. So who the hell knows what's going on? Maybe he was high on drugs or something like that. I don't know.
Something's been going on in this country.
Dude, it's been going on for a long fucking
time. And, this is something.
Well, this country is at the end of its fucking rope. It's
going to be studied in the future. I mean, it really is a moment like the lead in the pipes of Rome.
It's very, very unique to this
country. This does not happen in any other country, actually.
It doesn't happen anywhere else.
Other countries with political instability, terrorism.
Or they've got, organized crime. But
this is just nihilism. And I think actually from a historical perspective, the 2020 riots, the George Floyd riots, were kind of our generation's expression of a deep-seated nihilism, a manifestation of nihilism.
Yeah.
There actually wasn't really any political or social demand from that. Nothing specific.
Anything got done.
Nothing permanent change other than no more police, which just leads to more violence. I think a lot, particularly the whites and the kind of Generation Z whites in that involved in supporting that, were just fueled by a deep-seated urge to destroy things around them.
Yeah, they just wanted to go out and break
it. Wanted an excuse.
Yeah, there's no reason. Because they didn't there were changes.
That was the 68 revolution was the same way. Remember, they weren't talking about how they were poor or, a lot of people also said there's more students than ever in 1968 Europe and that they were worried about getting jobs in the future, but that was not seen at the time. Their slogan was literally, life is boring. Let's make life excited because I'm bored. That was literally the slogan of the 68. 68ers. And I think that the George Floyd riots were fueled by something similar. It's like, I'm bored.
Yeah, I think
I'm bored by law and order. I'm bored by people. I don't want to have children. I don't want to get married. I'm bored by all the fact that you go outside or you go to work and you don't get killed or whatever. I want a little bit of excitement. In fact, you even heard some hipsters just a few years ago say, I miss the old New York. You know, some fucker from Iowa that moves to New York City kind of 2010 and sees a safe Bushwick that did not exist before and goes,
is signaling though. Like,
I wish I lived in,
that's a lot of anti, like sort of status anti. Well, I wish I lived in like authentic Bushwick when there was like more beaners and instead of all these white people. Saw that shit. I always saw
that. Well, now they have it and they're leaving.
Well, I'm like, yeah, but I would always say back then I would call people out when they'd say, but really? Because you could go, literally, the Puerto Ricans are right down that way.
That way.
You could go walk. You could. They're out there on the corners, too. They're out there on the corners. Go walk through their neighborhood. Do it.
What's that diner in Bushwick? You probably remember the one with the wood panels. It has a 70s vibe. That Bushwick diner. It's really cheap. It's actually a nice little – it's a nice little place. It was featured in a bunch of movies and TV shows. Well, anyway, that diner, like you cross the street from – so that diner is just full of hipsters and gentrifiers. Tina's. There we go. Tina's Diner. And they sell novelty T-shirts and so on. It's on Flushing Avenue. Well, you cross the street from Tina's Diner and you got some gangsta-ass niggas everywhere.
Yeah.
And the only thing keeping them from literally raping and killing you, well, as we've learned,
it was the police.
It was the police.
Now they're gone.
And now they're raping and killing you.
Now they're gone.
Now you got the old New York baby.
And the cops would tied up and raped for 5 days. Whatever else you want to say about them, like politically, the cops kind of suck. But in those situations, the cops would do that. They would protect the white. They would consciously protect white people from blacks.
Right. Like
I remember I went to a concert years ago at Liberty State Park. In Jersey City.
Yeah.
And my friend was but it was fine for the concert, right?
Right.
Because, police are there, right? And the thing is, I was with my friends and another friend was coming to pick us up and he got lost. And this was actually before everybody had GPS and everything. Right. He got lost and we were waiting there and the cops were like, listen, we're clearing out.
Yeah. Yeah, get the fuck out of here.
And so they were like, you're not going to want to stick around. And we were like, oh, he'll be here soon enough. But nothing happened. But it was still, it was like eventually he fucking, like, we had cell phones, didn't have GPS back then. So he was on the phone like, yo, bro, where the fuck? He's like, oh, I'm just gas station. And it was stupid. But like, in the end, we found the guy and we got out. Nothing happened. But we did get some looks from some of the blacks and the Spanish, Hispanics or the mixed things or whatever in the neighborhood. But it was really funny. The cops were like, where to go? So, you know, you're going to probably want to go though. And like, we can't, like, we would stick around, but, you know, our shift, and, like, they're not so dedicated that they're going to stick around after their shift. Plus, it's not their job at that point.
No,
but,
it's not.
But they definitely saw their job in when that concert was going on. It was like, oh, we're here to make sure the blacks don't come and fuck this up. Like,
they're not doing it anymore.
No, now they don't do that.
And they shouldn't. They're right to do not to do anything.
Well, I mean, what's in it for them?
Right.
You know, because
I don't know if you saw this, but the Department of Justice, Merrick Garland, has a new law or a rule at the DOJ where federal agents see, you know how they have like task forces that mix federal agents with local police?
Yeah. Oh,
well, if they see a local police officer engaging in the excessive use of force against African Americans, then the federal agents are actually, they have a duty, which, by the way, goes against every Supreme Court precedent of qualified immunity in some respects. Yeah. They have a duty to arrest the police officer.
All right. Well, I would say this to cops.
Yes.
Stop cooperating with the feds.
Stop cooperating with federal agents.
I can't
agents.
Tell you how many times, I mean, I've heard of and I've Tell seen them. Incidents where
Give them
when
the work
a fed
around.
Is going to bother somebody on political shit, they bring like a local cop with them.
They always do. Yes.
If you're that local cop, be like, yeah, you know, I'm on another job right now.
Right, but the problem is some
of
the
local
cops
They
want the career boost.
They
or
think
the
that they're
going to
get in or something like that. But I'll tell you what, if you're a white male, you're not.
You're never going to get in.
If you're a white male cop and you think cooperating with the feds.
The only thing is that they're taking notes on you.
If you're a fag.
They're taking notes on you when you're working with.
They're there to investigate you as much as they are investigate whatever white supremacist so called that they're going to bother.
Exactly.
And the only way you're getting in, if you're a white man cop, the only way you're getting into the feds, you got to be a faggot.
Yes.
The only way.
I would argue that at this point, so it says
even
so
that's dodgy.
This is the story here. It says. Justice Department will direct federal agents to intervene if they see police abuse. So it says here, the Justice Department is updating its use of force policy to direct federal agents to intervene if they witness any law enforcement official using –
here's the funny thing, though.
Just imagine you get some asshole libtard from D.C. come into – embed itself into your police department, likely to do some politicized shit like look at Donald Trump's tax records or something.
They're probably there to bother people in your community that like went to January 6th or like sympathized with made a Facebook comment or something. It's like –
If you have to arrest someone while on the job, now you have a literal human resources agent watching every move.
Yeah.
And so this says why it matters. The department's policy has not been updated since 2004. Attorney General Garland said in a memo, the addition comes years after years of protests over police killings, particularly involving black people, of course.
I mean, the funny thing
Well, you know what, though? I don't really care because the people that –
this is
blowback from this are people that deserve it.
Well, my thing is
these
people want to eat.
You work for Goldman Sachs. You don't deserve to live.
If they want to make it so it's impossible to be a decent white cop.
Yeah.
You're just making this country not viable anymore. I mean, you have to go, and increasingly, you make our case and the case we're making to the white people and others too of this country, which is that this government. This system, this ruling system, not just the government, the ruling system does not deserve to exist.
Nope.
It doesn't deserve to have the kind of power it has. Look at what they do. I mean, because the thing is, in reality, I know there was like Black Lives Matter protests and all that crap.
Yeah.
But in reality, today, in terms of the problems today, who is asking for this? There is no outcry over police racism. Like, the idea of police racism was always astroturfed, and they managed to astroturf it in 2020 big, but Jazzhands and Warren were going over top issues for Americans,
and the top one
is food and gas prices.
Yeah.
And, like, I think, I can't remember what number two is, something along those lines. Oh, home prices is number two. Yeah. Inability to buy a home. Food and gas is number one. Inability to buy a home is number two. Violent crime is number three.
But that's actually the top three concerns for everyone all the time.
Yeah.
Most people are not interested in these abstract ideological, political battles. They don't care.
Although immigration yes, is
that's
also
up there too.
Yeah.
They don't care about fucking racism. Most people know that that shit is bullshit. Including
even, like, blacks
many
and
non-whites.
Definitely,
yeah.
Definitely non-white, non-blacks. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, they're even more aware of it than the average
like
person.
People that aren't white, aren't black. Like, they
they live in places like New York and California.
They're living adjacent to niggers, and they're
right.
just like,
and they know it's awful. All bullshit. Yeah. But the point is, the average person, whether it's in the Ukraine in the middle of the war, to the average American, their main concern is making enough money to pay for their everyday needs and being left alone by outside, like, political actors. And because the left is so – the Jews on the left are – and oftentimes liberals on their own are actually kind of renegades right now.
One of the ways that they liberal – Jewish liberalism used to present enemy ideologies opposed to it in media and entertainment was of, like, bothering people that wanted to be left alone, right? Like you would see the Nazi gang or something like that, like,
right.
in some of their TV shows.
Right.
It's like people just they're and there's that famous Twilight Zone episode with Dennis Hopper playing, like, the Nazi, and he's not getting a good response because the people on the street are just like, yeah, shut up, like, no one gives a shit about this crap, right?
Right.
And it's sort of funny because it's like, but replace that Nazi or white nationalist with, like, a libtard, like, spewing their crap, and you'll get the same fucking response. In fact, you might get even more hostility, right? But it's sort of funny because it's like they give a fuck. It's just not there. They can't muster it for Ukraine.
Even,
they couldn't muster it
well,
for the mass shooting.
Well, I think one other thing too is that they're getting kind of demoralized by things like, I don't know if you saw the story now, which is that the Black Lives Matter Network Foundation is, as we thought and knew from the very beginning, is just a way for niggers to steal money from white retards.
Of course. I mean, that was always what it was. So what, they got caught doing some...
Oh, man. So listen to this. So this
I heard something about this
yesterday.
Too, none of it surprised me.
It says here, but the Black Lives Matter Global Foundation tax documents filed like 3 years later after they're supposed to file them.
I'm surprised they even did it, because I would assume niggas would be like,
so it says here Patrice Cullors paid her brother, who is a graffiti artist, $840,000 for security services.
Nice.
And $970,000 to a company owned by her child's, by her baby daddy, for creative services. It says here. Oh, it says the single biggest payout, which was $2.1 million, went to a consulting firm owned by another of its current board members, Shalomia Bowers.
Shalomia.
Yeah, it says here.
That's got to just be an accident of syllables.
It says here.
Shalomia.
Cullors admitted on an MSNBC podcast that she made mistakes after $90 million in, quote, white guilt money flooded to the group. That's her words, by the way, white guilt money flooded to the group after George Floyd's death, but complained that those mistakes are now being, quote, weaponized against.
Well, here's what this is.
The feds are actually going after these people because they're actually themselves.
Well, they're mad, and it's embarrassing. But here's the question.
This is money that was meant to attack white people.
Here's my question.
And instead it's being stolen.
Well, here's my question. Is this so genuine? Seriously, like, what were they supposed to do with it?
Right.
Like, I'm not even mad about that.
No.
Like, I think it's funny.
I think it's
like,
awesome.
Patrice Cullors was one that bought, like,
a
$2.5 million mansion in
some,
like, bro, right. She moved to like, well, wasn't it that like she was the one who moved to some rich white neighborhood with a big like $2.5 million mansion, and she got flack for that. And then there were people then of course, what's funny is then you got the blacktivist and like the ideological, like the mulatto ones that learn the talking points, and they learn it's the same trick they pull over and over again. When they get criticism, they accuse you of fragility, right? Like you're being fragile and you're manifesting your neo-colonial or whatever the hell it is, impulses, and you're weaponizing this against me as a woman of color, all that same crap. And so people were criticizing her for that, and then if you're black and you criticize them, you can get accused of cooning. Although I don't think that someone like Patrice Cullors would use that term. That's more of a that's more of an actual black term.
Yeah,
you know. but it's like my thing is this. It was actually funny. Ark Nation was even saying like, you know, I don't even hold homegirl. I don't even hold it against her.
No,
because like, what else are you gonna do? It's like, what does Black Lives Matter need money for?
Well, it's for a fake cause.
It's the cause is fake, so
the cause is fake.
You might as well just steal it. It's not even stealing.
Wasn't that the point the whole time?
It was a grift, so she was grifting. I mean, what I don't even, if I were her, I wouldn't even, I mean, the apologies are only because she's like, people are mad about it, but it's like, I guess it's like Jews had something else in mind for that.
Like,
but
Zog and Jews probably wanted it to be used to, like, you know, lobby politicians to pass anti-white laws or things like that.
Yeah,
but actually,
or just
like,
maybe go to Jewish organizations.
Or that. Well, that's what they're going to do next.
You know, probably what it was, it probably is what they're mad about, is that it wasn't a Jew dispersing these funds, that there should have been, like, that somehow
there were some involved.
There were Jews, like Susan Rosenberg, etc. But, like, some, you know, there was some, it's really funny. The problem that Jews run into, though, is that, of course, we're always going to be out here saying, yeah, Jews run that stuff.
Right.
And then if they're actually running it, it's like, see, we told you.
Yeah.
And then, like,
it says here, the tax documents show BLM GNF spent at least $37 million on grants, real estate, consulting, and other undisclosed expenses
this past year, leaving
them still with tens of millions of dollars of white guilt cash. It says here, strangely, it looks like an outfit founded after the death of Trayvon Martin only gave $200,000 to the Trayvon Martin Foundation.
Which is another grift.
Far less.
Which is just another grift.
Far less than it paid to Cullors' brother and her son's father. So like, Patrice Cullors' family members made more money from the Trayvon Martin Foundation.
What's funny is this
than the Trayvon.
This is what Jews would do too, except it's different because with blacks, it's like, it's one, they do it in a more ham-fisted way and in a more immediate way. And nothing goes back to like any kind of black power or black community. It's like they just spend it on like luxuries, right?
Yeah.
Because blacks love luxury items and luxury goods. Like they love luxury cars and good fine clothes and the appearance. They don't actually like how actually good liquor tastes, but they like the appearance of having it.
Yeah.
What they really want is that Mad Dog, but they want to pretend
they want something that tastes like candy apple.
But they want it to be called apple. Like Cavassier or like
Yes.
They want to call it a
Starburst flavored liquor
and
but
give
call
it, like, some
it something
high
French.
Class name. And you will make and like, give it like a give like a diamond glittery label and like
pink Starburst flavored like strawberry pink Starburst.
And have like a gold embossed label on it and you know like a really kind of like fancy like luxury you want to go like kind of go, like Donald Trump kind of aesthetics, right?
Yeah.
They just
love
that shit. So black women like it too. Black women are all about like the luxuriating and like spoiling themselves and like you always hear them talk about it, you know.
Right.
I'm gonna be like with a self-care is what they call it.
Yeah.
Which just means like going and getting a massage or something like that.
Like, they love that shit.
They love all that crap.
Yeah.
Just like smearing themselves with cocoa butter.
The narcissism.
And so like with blacks, it's like with Jews, it's like, all right, so we're going to take this money and we're going to redistribute it amongst Jews, but it's going to go strategically to various Jews working to further Jewish power in certain arenas.
Yes.
Blacks are like, we're just going
to buy wrote the a bunch laws. Of- they wrote the laws specifically to use that money like that themselves. The tax exemption and
just like blowing it all on luxury goods.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, like a mansion, blacks like will just take cars. And, yeah.
I mean, that's what happens with whenever they give aid to Haiti. I mean, this is just a repeated pattern over and over and over again.
Right, right.
With blacks, like they will, if you give them free money, they will take it.
Well, it's just so funny.
It's like, because remember the wire yeah. when Marlowe goes up to the kids, he's like, "Yo, Marlowe, giving you $200 each, just being good to the kids in the neighborhood." He's like, one of the kids turns it down, which, by the way, probably never happened.
That would never in a million years happen. No.
But the other kid's like, "Well, you know, it's drug money, but like, I ain't gonna say no."
They wouldn't even have a discussion about
and
that.
But here's the thing. The next scene is the mayor or the black congressman who is also getting money from the drug dealers, and he says the same shit.
Right.
He says the same thing. He's like, "Yo, if someone wants to give me money, I ain't gonna say no." Right. You know? And that's how it works. So.
Right. Like, the fact that they had like the honorable, was it that kid that they eventually killed?
Oh,
they killed that light-skinned kid with like the
was like, it Brody?
Was it Wallace?
Yes.
Because Wallace was the one who was like, he was always like the good one. He was like the one who's trying to teach the niggas how to do math and shit.
Yeah.
And they ended up killing him.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. No, but I mean, that's the thing, man. Like, everyone knew this was going to happen as it was happening.
Wallace was like the self insert of the white hipster.
Yes. Yes. But everyone knew when they were giving all this money, I mean, literally nothing came. I mean, one of the reasons why no legislation or lasting anything happened after Black Lives Matter, other than make white people's lives a little more difficult, a lot more difficult.
Well,
in informal ways.
It was all informal, right? Even the defunding of the police.
None of the money, all the money that was meant to be used for lobbying and political donations to actually get the sausage made, as they say. All that money was stolen.
But the thing is, it's also like, what sausage are they going to make? That was something that has been, we've been talking about over the last few days, where it's even with this, this Buffalo shooting, like, what sausage can they make? Like, in the 60s, it was clear. They had, like, unlike in Europe, the 60s stuff in America did result in serious changes.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't nihilistic. There was a goal to it.
Wow, it was, but they did have a goal.
It was, much of it was nihilistic, but there was an overall goal that was achieved, ultimately the Civil Rights Act and many of the other, like, desegregation, things that weren't actually relevant in Europe, right? They weren't relevant because they didn't have as many blacks then.
Well, you know what the 68 Revolution had in common with the George Floyd riots is that the people that were criticizing French society failed to come up with a counter system or a new system. So they had hammer and sickle flags and quoted Chairman Mao, but they never quite articulated what exactly they wanted.
Like, why should France be like that? Like, there's not really any obvious
reason. The average moron student didn't know why he was going out and rioting. The kikes that were fucking leading it did. They knew exactly what they were doing. But the average white student in France, the average French student, didn't know what they were doing. And I think that for the 2020 riots, you know, you saw a lot of stuff that they're mad about, systematic racism and white privilege. But what was their counter ideal?
Well, the problem is, though,
because it wasn't really communism.
But if you think about it, like,
what was it?
Like, what we talked about, how, you know, we talked about how, like, the Vietnam War was the only war that Jews have, like, in the majority opposed. There was some
the only one.
There were some Jews. Yeah. Like, I've got this Meyer Kahane essay where he talks about how we need to support it because, but he didn't give a shit about Vietnam. He said we need to support it because we need to support American militarism, generally speaking, because we're going to need it.
Yeah.
That was his point. Literally, he basically saying these dumb goy American patriots that want to go fight communism, we're going to need to have them fight Israel's battles not in exactly those terms, but that's essentially what he was saying.
Right.
Other than that, they mostly opposed it. And, the reason there was that they were kind of ridding the U.S. establishment of the last vestiges of the old, like, WASP elites. Because a lot of those guys that were in the Defense Department and stuff like that were,
we talked about
Robert McNamara and stuff. These were like WASPy people, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, even though they were cucking for Israel and things like that, but they were still ultimately it was amazing how white the foreign policy establishment back then was. Whereas today, I mean, Henry Kissinger was Secretary of State, of course, but today we have, total Jewish control. So when you're doing the 1960s and you're doing like the Vietnam War protests to discredit the establishment, you're doing civil rights to get new anti-white laws passed, you achieve all of that. Well, now you've been in power for 50 years. You've had your 60s. You had your major thing in World War II. You had the Cultural Revolution in the 1960s. Now you've been in basically absolute, more or less absolute power over institutions, at least, for 50 years. And that at the same time, you're also telling people this society is really fucked up and bad.
Yeah.
What can you do? What reform? The only reforms are like just to make things worse for whites, which they did, but they didn't do it in any formal way, because it's like if they do that, if they kind of formally do that, then they're going to get a reaction.
Right.
So, I mean, they're already getting a reaction, but it's like if they would prefer the reaction be either apathy or something stupid. But that can only last so long, and even some of the stupid things are like a pain in the ass to them because like it just creates problems. But, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, and the other thing is this: it's like, what is the point of all this? I find myself asking this more and more, particularly as I've gotten a little older and less less more like worrying about my own life, like which was when I was younger, I was always constantly concerned, like, what is my life going to be about, you know, like, where am I going to go? And but now I'm like, where is any of this going?
Yeah,
right. And like, what is the point? Like,
back,
you know, what
back
does
to
it,
the yeah. back to the 68 revolution, they were asking the same question. What I mean by they, I'm talking about the Jews and fags,
right,
that served as the philosophers of it, like Derrida, Foucault, and Deleuze. And these were all basically Jews and fags that took a previous generation of German Jews' subversive ideas, and to some extent Nietzsche as well, and cultivated the new system, the post-war system, in a delayed form, which was one based off Jewish globalism, cosmopolitanism, and literally sodomy.
Yeah,
E. Michael Jones is right about that angle. That sodomy is the man-on-man anal sex is the one of the core inspirations and manifestations of this spirit.
It is.
And I think what the spirit of it is that these – hey, when everything is kind of nice and normal, what would happen if I just started – you know, it's like when you play those computer games where they're like decision based, and you have different branches of the story.
Like choose and your own adventure.
And you just
let's
pick
see where
the
dialogue
worst.
Tree goes if I make this decision.
Let me see what happens if I make the most antisocial decisions possible.
Right.
Just out of curiosity. Like I remember playing a computer game where I did it myself. I wanted to see what happened if I nuked the city.
Yeah, of course.
Out of curiosity. But it's one thing to like joke around as like an abstraction or entertainment. It's another thing to have the power to do that kind of shit in the real world.
I think they also
Jews and fags do now.
To some of them, they genuinely seem to have at least like a certain type of elite and culturally. Like I was watching this interview with this old cyberpunk sci-fi writer named Rudy Rucker, who's not very famous. I'm not sure if he's Jewish or not. I don't think he is. And he wrote a bunch of like cyberpunky books, and his hero was like William Burroughs. And in this interview, and he kind of his heyday was like in the 70s and then in the 80s, so he was a little bit late from the 60s, but he grew up in the 60s.
Yeah.
And he was talking to this interviewer about why he liked Burroughs so much. And he said, like, you know, I grew up in this really boring, bland, suburban middle-class family, and he's like, one day I was like looking in my brother's room for porno because I knew my brother had porn.
Yeah.
And I found a William Burroughs book, and I read it, and the first scene I was reading, there were these two gay men were doing like erotic asphyxiation after getting high on heroin. And he's like, and that just really intrigued me. And then he's like, and this is what really intrigued me about Burroughs and everything about him was that he was a rebel like three times over because he was gay, he was a drug addict, and he had killed his wife. And so he was just an outcast in all these ways. I'm like, in other words, he's a complete fucking piece of shit.
Yes.
Yet there was something in his bougie asshole that like was just intrigued by that. Like he was just like, wow, like
wealthy people. Yeah. I mean, if you talk to any random group of parents, say between 35 and 40, every one of their kids, if they're 10, 11, is transitioning. Bill Maher, that's all they talk about.
As you said, Bill Maher made the point.
Yeah.
And again, like, you know, he's getting out in front of what he's seeing are like problematic things coming out of this dumb system that, you know, he was like, if all these so-called trans kids are like so natural, how come they're all in California and like none in Ohio?
Exactly. Well, they have their explanation for it, but
it's like repression.
Right. We all know what the real answer is. But the irony of this is that the people that are intrigued by that kind of stuff are the ones that uphold the injustice. And, you know, back to the point that the most reliable Emmanuel Macron voters are those people, the 68ers.
The kind of people that would be intrigued by William Burroughs because he was a faggot, a heroin addict, and he murdered somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's who makes up the voting block of a Macron, a Biden.
The people that are invested, not the people that are holding their nose and voting.
Right. Like the people setting the agenda.
Right. Yeah.
Are those types of people, which again, notice the main lesson here, which is that they're the new center. If that's the new center, how can you be surprised when the slightly to the left version is changing a kindergartner's gender?
Right.
You can't be surprised. So this is a political system that cannot, common sense becomes Nazism, which is actually true in a sense, beyond
the pale right-wing extremism by the lights of the current system, though. It doesn't even deserve to be in the same room or, like, you know, to even be addressed. It's like, you know,
what I think is also interesting about comparing the 68 revolution with the George Floyd fake revolution is how the burden of these fake struggles seems to like weigh these people down. These elites, like, they're visibly exhausted.
Yeah.
By having to balance
them and juggle them. And
some people were saying this right in comparing them to clerics, clergy. Yes. These are people that are upholding the new religions, and they get some sort of satisfaction from this. But it also, speaking of mental illness, causes them to develop mental dysfunctions.
Well, they've also made mental illness as like a status marker.
Yes, and Deleuze was the one that came up with that schizophrenia is like the ultimate rebellion from capitalism.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing Rudy Rucker was saying. He was obviously influenced by the same people.
All of these things
that are terrible are not just like awful things.
No.
They're rebellions.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but no, like rebellion was like... It's like
Look at the event tree here. So you get Deleuze celebrating schizophrenia as rebellion. You get the schizophrenics become powerful. They make it basically impossible to put them in institutions where they belong. And you got a massive murder and crime rate. You do see how these things lead to the ultimate chaos and breakdown of a society, and I don't see how it's even possible, because there's no voice of reason in any of the elites in the West, in the Atlanticist order. I don't know what could possibly be done, because the people that have the common sense don't have the access or education, you know, because the credentialists locked them out. Right. And
institutions that like groom people to be in power or to take positions of authority just are not like.
Right. Know. So, I mean, I think the way that we're going to look at this is perhaps how the excesses of social media and so on, but there's also something deeper that happened after the post-war, which was the victory of nihilism was World War II.
Yeah, I really feel
the
like
victory of evil.
I feel like there's a lot of and it's natural to do, because when you see people doing dumb shit, you kind of hate them for it. You know what I mean? At least temporarily, before you can be like, all right, I should stop. Like, it's not, you know, because when it's like people are like, oh, social media. But the funny thing is, we can complain about social media, but they also complain about it. And they complain about it because social media.
They don't like the political aspects of it.
In some sense, yeah, the political aspects of it. They're happy with the non-political aspects of it, right? Where, like, OnlyFans and that kind of crap, which isn't really social media. It's just, like, prostitution. But they don't, you know, the people that started using it politically, and then that became a really popular way to use it, they had to make it impossible to use it that way. So, of course, it got even more degenerate and stupider when it couldn't be used politically for real, like, actually politically, right? It couldn't actually be used to discuss real issues.
Yeah.
So the only thing getting through the filters is this kind of crap. So that's what it is now, right?
So let me just cut in for 1 second. So yes, the shooter is a Salvador Ramos.
Okay, there we go.
18 years old. 14 students and a teacher have been confirmed dead.
Jesus Christ.
That has to be some sort of a record of some kind. I mean,
I think Sandy Hook more. Yeah, that's died, but it doesn't. I mean,
that's horrible. Yeah, I mean,
still, this is insanity. And
I mean, where else in the world does this happen?
I don't even understand why this would happen. Like, why wouldn't you? I mean, look, to get into the mind of somebody who was going to do something like this at all, it's like I could see it there being like, oh, gunmen hold up in school. Mm-hmm. And the cops can't go in because all these kids in there, right?
Yeah.
And then, oh, we got a standoff situation, and then how's that going to get resolved, right?
But right.
It seems to just run in and start shooting kids. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
That I think, is also part of that nihilism, which is, you know, oh, I'm in a bad situation. Let me take down 20 people with me. That's another way of you know, I don't know. But, yeah. Let's see if the Republicans politicize this. It's obviously an illegal alien.
The shooter, 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, died. Ramos was reportedly a student at the school. So this
doesn't mean he's not an illegal alien.
Maybe this border patrol stuff is not true.
Yeah.
It might have been that border patrol were the first closest law enforcement available. Because that's probably – this might just be a school shooting. I think it's just a school shooting, and it's just the reason – he shot his grandmother before going to school. So this is
this is another psycho. Yeah,
this guy's a psycho. He's a psychopath. Yeah,
right. Again,
so there you go. So probably the Border Patrol angle is literally they were the first armed law enforcement available to go and do something. So they sent them in. I guess they're the closest because it is near the Mexican border in Texas. So yeah. So
there's something else going on in this country, and everything does feel a lot crazier. And you know,
it actually makes sense, frankly. That he was living in America rather than Mexico.
Yeah, because this doesn't
less expecting this to happen from somebody coming over the border from Mexico.
Right.
You know, not that I'm like...
They would do it, well, they kill 20, 30 people, but usually over drugs and money.
Yeah, no, it's like cartel shit, right?
Right. But I think that what it is, though, is that there's sociopathic people in the population, and they'll join whatever is the dominant thing. And they get sucked up into that, you know. And in America, we don't even have the civic virtue to have drug cartels.
you're absolutely true, right? No, we don't even have the cohesiveness to have organized crime.
You know, so people go and they shoot a bunch of little kids like this.
It's like ordinarily you think the psychopath would be recruited to be like the Luca Brasi for like the local gangster,
right?
The guy that goes and like breaks legs. But they don't. Yeah. We don't even have. We don't even have the social fabric that drug cartels just non-existent. That's kind of what my point about it is. With like, with you look at America, it's like, what is the point? Like, why does this country exist? And I mean, like, what? Like, where is it going? What is the purpose of it? I mean, because it's not even like I understand that people like the bread and butter issues of food, gas, home prices, crime stuff. That's always number one. But like, you know. There's a lot of places where that can be solved, and then there's also people want to feel like they're this is what, you know, this is what National Socialism was about, and there's been other movements that have been about it, of like, it's not just about like the bread and butter, but it is about our destiny as a people. But there's just, in America, that they used to talk like people used to, I mean, there are people that it's sort of stupid to us. When we see someone who's like a genuine American patriot, and we see someone that's our age or younger, we know they're just faking because we know they don't feel it. But, right. You know, you will still get older people, although they're dying off rapidly, you know, who maybe at one point did have a good reason to feel patriotic.
Well, uniting crusades and so on. And I think now that instinct
that's off
has
the table. They can't do it.
Well, you can still have it, but it has to be in like fighting enemies of the Jews.
But it doesn't work, though. You don't animate
you don't
the population.
Feel it. You don't,
the population doesn't. It's purely amongst themselves.
I mean, I
the Ukraine thing is a perfect example. Like no, like I'm nobody in this country. There was a brief moment, but even that was just like purely relegated to Twitter, and it felt like the whole like let's go like fight Russia, Ukraine, go Ukraine was just this tiny little brief candle of a moment, and the only people that really felt it or really cared were just these like the garbage elite class, and like the average people just got over it. Like it's just not something. I mean, that was of all current things, that thing was current for the shortest time. Like it was current for like a few days.
Well, it also pisses people off. I don't see the polls yet on this, but I mean, what do people think of having to pay $5.50 for gas, gasoline, while $40 billion go to fight a losing war that they're lying about losing? Well, let me make this very clear. When videos are constantly coming out of hundreds, if not thousands, now in Azovstal, thousands of Ukrainian soldiers surrendering, you're losing the war.
They had another big surrender this morning.
Yeah, if thousands of soldiers are surrendering, and you don't see equivalents for the Russian side. The Russians are winning the war.
Well, Zelensky said a couple days ago that Ukrainians were taking 100 casualties a day. How long
that's,
can you count?
And that's
you
an
keep
under
that up?
That's an undercount.
And that's yeah, that's opinion. And that's a conservative estimate.
They like, do not release casualty figures. If that was
Ukrainian
entirely accurate, you can probably multiply that by 3.
The Ukrainian military has probably lost tens of thousands of men.
Yeah.
It's almost done. Like they're basically, even now the biggest cheerleaders, like the New York Times came out with an editorial basically saying it's time to sue for peace.
Why didn't you do that before the war started?
But my thing was like, see, I was saying this, we were saying this from the beginning. One, we were saying this can be avoided.
Yeah.
And two, as soon as we were like, all right, this is going to be bad. So you had to call this a halt right now. Russia called your bluff. You have to give them what they want, right? Because you're not going to fight. And then,
well, if you know the significance of the Azovstal surrender, the Azov battalion are not just rank and file. They're actually considered to be superior soldiers than even some of the elite units in Ukraine, in the sense that they tied up the Russians for a long time in Mariupol.
Well, that Mariupol battle took a lot longer than they thought it was going
to. And it was because of the Azov battalion. This was the hard part. This was the hump to get over.
Yes, they've gotten over it now.
And in the Ukraine itself, they consider them to be their absolute most elite units, is the Azov battalion. So thousands of these guys surrendering is a sign that the war is
almost over. They're getting others surrendering now, and I think there's going to be a bit of – I could be wrong, but I think there's going to – maybe they'll also just mask it from us. But the other thing is you're seeing Henry Kissinger come out and saying like we have to –
Kissinger is he's a Zog pragmatist.
He's like a
he brokered the China deal,
and it seems that this tiny pragmatist Zog faction is now being heard, at least, because nobody wanted to hear anybody say anything like that like a month ago. No. They still believe, and I'm wondering how much of this propaganda, because
if you actually look at the foreign policy op-ed pages. That opinion that he just gave them permission to give that opinion, because just a week ago, that opinion of give them their whatever they want and sue for peace was not allowed.
Yeah.
And the Quincy Institute, which is the anti-war think tank, they've been complaining about this for a long time. Now, these are the finest minds in international relations and foreign policy in America. And they're
other
just
than us.
Well, that too, but they have been completely blocked out. And
well, I remember when they made the Quincy Institute.
When you read on the Quincy Institute, real quick, the things they're writing is mostly just frustration.
Are like, Mearsheimer and Walton involved in that? They have to be.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Like the one from the other day is, has Biden lost the plot on Iran? And this is a general statement that they put out that was published in MSNBC, where they're talking about how the U.S. is actually closer to a full-scale war with Iran than even with Bush or even Trump right now. They're actively participating.
Well, yeah, this is what we were going to start talking
in
about.
In a mock invasion of Iran. This is something they're using. They're refueling Israeli jets in the exercises, and then you have the president just blurting out, "We were laughing about this, but it's not funny."
I got the video here. We
you know, having a senior citizen moment that could possibly start a fucking world war with China.
So
okay, I mean, yeah, you can laugh about it, but it is the president of the United States.
I mean, the thing is, like, it's laughable. Like, it is laughable. Like, there's a lot of it's messed up and there's consequences, but like,
yeah,
you can, I would say you can laugh. Like, you can, you can, because you know,
it's just downright crazy.
I mean, it's
crazy. It's downright crazy.
It doesn't make sense. And it's like,
it's unhinged.
Yeah. This country doesn't make
imagine,
sense.
Imagine if
these people don't
imagine, just imagine if the shoe is on the other foot. And, you know, this guy, Joe Biden, could literally, with moments like that, Mr. Magoo America into a three-front war with three superpowers. But imagine if the, say, Chinese government said, if the United States does this or that, we will militarily confront the United States,
right,
which they always stop short of doing.
They do. And the funny thing is
they are, like, shocked by
– was saying, like, Chuck Todd on Meet the Press – was hosting like a guy doing like war games with China. And he even did, it was like a to be continued, where he's like, tune in next week where we discuss who won the war game with China and like who would win, and let's like game it all out and stuff. And this is like the so-called like premier political talk show that all the elites and everyone inside the Beltway watches. And here's this like, this rat-faced little Jew doing like a war game against China. It's like, what are the Chinese supposed to think about that? Like, what are they supposed to think about that when they see that this is like on the premier news station in America and like the premier political show that like more watched, you know, than the cable news show, the cable news shows are throughout the week. But anyway.
Yeah.
Asked if the United States would, quote, get involved militarily.
Oh, militarily.
If China,
China came up, he immediately started doing a Chinese. Oh, will we get involved militarily? Yes, we will.
To invade Taiwan. This is the exchange.
You didn't want to get involved in the Ukraine conflict militarily for obvious reasons. Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are.
That's a commitment we made. We agree with a one China policy. We've signed on to it. And all the attendant agreements.
Contradicting himself.
So one thing I'm curious about, this earpiece he's got, is that like a hearing aid or is someone feeding him lines? I'm serious. Is that routine?
It's probably Ron Klein.
Yeah, there's someone.
What the fuck did you just say?
Is there somebody in his ear telling him?
It's literally.
It's not like they're speaking of. It's not the UN.
Literally, Blinken or Ron Klein, who actually run that government, being like, "Yo, what the fuck did you just say?"
Yeah, well, I'm curious what it is, because it's not like. It's not like they're speaking another language to him. Or is this there's a Japanese flag. Is he in Japan?
Maybe
he's in Japan. If that's so, then that would explain the quad.
Okay. Quad, yes.
Okay, all right, so
force, just taken by force, is just not appropriate. It'll dislocate the entire region and be another action similar to what happened in Ukraine.
The United States already provides defensive weapons to Taiwan and has previously maintained what is called strategic ambiguity about intervening militarily in the event of a
Chinese
attack.
Guy's giving it away.
The comments this morning seemed a little less ambiguous as to whether they were strategic. CNN has learned the president's comments caught his top aides off guard. They are already issuing some clarifications this morning. Beijing issued a response a short time ago as well.
The president also announced that 13 nations will be joining a new Asia-Pacific economic framework. The goal is to level the economic playing field with China. President Biden also ripping into Vladimir Putin for attempting to eliminate the identity of Ukraine. He says Russia must pay a long-term price.
So,
when asked about the challenge,
What's going on here is interesting. So liberal nationalism, if you were to call it that, is what seems to be something that they're going for. And I think that Yoram Hazony, who sunk his fangs into the populist right, is the kind of spiritual leader of this sort of liberalist nationalism that Biden and Macron and other NATO people, and honestly, Richard Spencer.
Yeah, Richard Spencer's going for it in a big way. Yeah, he loves
part.
Well, he wants to be part of something like this. I mean,
yeah. Well, but the problem is that the idea of a liberal centered nationalism is a irreconcilable contradiction, in the sense that liberal, the individual, right, that these people claim to be the civic libertarian of, we don't put mentally ill people in prison, we punish Eastern European countries for electing Orban, that kind of stuff, is that the individual liberal that they claim to be defending is way too small-minded and small in number to inspire any kind of mass resistance.
Like,
and what you see in
this.
The Ukraine is them trying to overlay – in the Ukraine, they have been trying – the reason they're so obsessed with this is that they've overlaid this new liberal nationalism onto the Ukraine to pretend that the literal self-described national socialists in the Azovstal are actually knowingly – they're unknowingly doing it. And the leaders are probably just corrupt gangsters like Belitsky, who is tied to the kind of Armenian criminal that is up in a money launderer in the Ukrainian government. That's a whole other story. So the leadership of Azov Battalion knows all that, but the average soldier in there is not motivated by gay bathhouses and mass non-European immigration into his country, or liberalism in general, or individual rights. That's nothing that's inspiring any of those people at all. However, these people, the globalists that are supporting the Ukrainians have overlaid artificially these values onto that and projected them. Yeah. And when they eventually are fully defeated, what are they going to say? Like, you know, the kind of hawks that have come to the forefront in Poland and Sweden. Sweden wants to join NATO now. Washington. These people, like, they're not sincere.
Well, the thing is, I think one of the things that Kissinger said at the World Economic Forum was that the U.S. has overplayed their hand here. And what we risk now is the balance of power getting off kilter. And what he was saying was that the risk is that the position of the United States in Europe, if we suffer a loss, because it will be a loss, you know, for the United States and effectively like the Western Zog order. Which is like led by the United States, and of course Europe, like, you know, gravitates westwards, as sort of like satellite states or puppet states of this order. The prestige will be gone.
Yeah.
Because what is the promise of America to Europe? We will keep you economically in good shape, and we will protect you militarily.
Yes.
Well, both of those are gone now.
Well, what I think
they
is very
lost on both fronts.
What I think is quite like almost like a Frankenstein monster here is that they seem to be, and this is I think why people like Spencer like it, they seem to be trying to combine some sort of warped version of almost like European power or chauvinism even.
Yes.
But the values therefore are not actually Western pre-World War II values. The values therefore are liberal homosexual Jewish universalism.
Right.
And so you have the kind of shape
It's like white people unite behind like anti-white homosexuality.
Yeah, that's at the least weird it's something. Combination.
Because at least it's
that's and it coincides in places like Poland where they're kind of in a transition phase where this might actually work in Poland.
Now, what's funny is in Russia,
they're transitioning.
In Russia, they would actually say, "Well, it doesn't surprise us."
Yeah.
That liberalism is allied with Nazism. And you'll even get some conservative figures saying that.
Yes.
But the reason is not because there's any actual affinity there. The reason is just because liberalism is willing to pay mercenaries to do whatever.
Yeah.
And will use what forces they have.
I mean, they have no true intrinsic values. I mean, they're literally arming the people that did 9/11 in Syria.
Right. Yeah. Of course.
I mean,
that was known long.
So they don't care as long as you get.
You're talking about the Israelis, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, they're arming both. They're all the factions.
Yeah, that kind of if you want to call it chauvinism or jingoism or hawkishness combined with the nuttiness of the white people in the African garb kneeling.
What's funny is like. Liberalism had a better case in the past. Like, certainly the liberalism of the World War II era had a much better case for itself
than
what this shit is.
It's just not tenable, though.
Like, it's not... Like, there's a more reasonable kind of American liberalism that had a case for itself, at least, right? It could be... It wasn't totally crazy, and it didn't entirely make, like, zero sense. But it's like they've taken that, and they try to fall back to it as well, right? When they can. Even in America, they do the bit of, like, trying to fall back on, like... And I could see even some sort of, in America, like, a collective identity aspect to the idea of rights. Like, that people would be like, we're American here. We have rights. We're free in this country. You know, we get to speak our minds. And that's what we do, right? Like, that you can almost have, like, that be a sort of a collective identity identifier for an American. It's American is somebody that cares about your right to speech. Right?
Not anymore.
But the government doesn't.
And you know, they can't even make
that appeal anymore.
I think people that operate, let's just say, on a more visceral or instinctual understanding of what freedom is, which is like the freedom to go and to a sports game, people that think on that level, the system has kind of alienated them with the COVID restrictions. So, like, the guy that just wants to drink beer and watch baseball at the game couldn't do that for 2 years.
Which used to
be... So they've lost him. That used to be the backbone.
Interest of them to keep the sort of... Let those segments of the population that like to check out, that like to use their freedoms to be, I'm just going to do what I'm my thing. I'm going to watch the game, party, hang out, not get involved, not really worry too much about the bigger issues in life. Just kind of live my life and enjoy it.
Right.
But also, it's not even just COVID restrictions. It's just the economy.
Yeah, I think also
the economy is also and native, also anti-whiteness.
Well, the native white working classes, not just of America but of Europe and the West in general, are displaced by three or four different liberal values. One is the anti-whiteism. The second is the astonishing austerity that we've seen, especially in Southern Europe. That a lot of these countries like Italy and Greece and stuff, they're in NATO, but they're not so excited about being forced to participate in these international institutions because when they are having economic trouble,
what do they get out of it?
No one gave them any help.
They've never even seen the benefits. Like, at least like America and Western Europe, like, were in wealthy at one point. I mean, there's still like, there's a lot of money here, but the people's living standards are dropping, but they did have them at one point.
Right.
In Eastern Europe, they didn't really ever have them and they were made promises. And now it's like, hey,
going down the drain. Yeah, it's very odd.
Yeah.
And another thing too is that the centrist parties in Europe are also kind of they have an identity crisis because the values that powered them during the Cold War have kind of been thrown out for a sort of half technocratic, half ideological system. Again, just a system of contradictions. And what I mean by half technocratic and half ideological is what I said earlier, where you had like the CDC people and the kind of woke COVID scientists saying that white supremacy is a bigger health threat.
Right.
And so you have strict technocracy, but it's also in the hands of people that don't know what they're doing. So they're trying to almost – they're like halfway towards where China's at. But China's actually run by competent and you know, people actually have live in the real world.
Right.
In America, it's run by these kind of career whores.
Well, what and is the fundamental problem?
That's here? Why no one – that's why in China people actually trust the government, even if they have very strict – which I think, like you do, that they're doing the zero COVID policy to fuck the West economically.
I think they're doing it to not send
– I
not
think
send
that's
– stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like a sick out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a sick out on product.
That's what I think it is, but you know.
Yeah. But who knows? Maybe they're having problems there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But one of the things we were talking about towards the end of the show yesterday, because we were talking about this Walt Mearsheimer. You know, Mearsheimer is half Jewish. I don't think Walt is Jewish. I'm not sure. I'd have to look again.
I don't know about that.
Do you think he is?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. Sure. Well, in any case.
I could be wrong, but yeah.
I know Mearsheimer is half. I don't know about Walt. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But yeah. He certainly – Mearsheimer looks Jewish. Walt does not. But again, that's not a determinant factor all the time.
No.
In any case, they've thought of this thing called realism. They call their school of foreign policy realism. And I believe they are in the Quincy Institute.
Yes.
Or the Quincy Institute, as you say, yeah. from Massachusetts. they're in the Quincy Institute, and they've defined certain principles of realism. And Alex was reading through them yesterday, and he started reading them, and they were like, okay, that makes sense. And very quickly he ran into stuff where he's like, I've got a problem with this one. And the one that he started to have a problem with was when he was saying, like, states are rational actors. And now I was like, well, let me defend that statement for a second, because what they're doing is they're trying to teach America something. They're trying to, like, they're saying this as a way of, like, respond, because they're writing their stuff in the hopes that, like, foreign policy, Jewish foreign policy elites in America will read it and get their head screwed on straight, right? So they put out things like, Iran is going to put a suitcase nuke in, like, Dulles Airport or something like that, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They put this kind of shit out there, right?
Yeah,
it's, like, crazy. So, they, like, literally the U.S. foreign policy establishment particularly seems insane, like lunatics, like ideologically motivated lunatics.
Yeah.
And so they're one of their things is, like, states are rational actors. Like, Alex is like, I don't think this applies to America.
America's an exception.
It doesn't. But the thing is, the reason is because America is not run
by
Americans. It's run by Jews. And I think a lot of this self-contradictory ideological insanity is that just all of the
can't
different
talk about
balls what? In the air, all the different social and political things that Jews are juggling just to keep America from, like having like a will to power.
America is like a country that had AIDS in the has AIDS in the 90s, in that it has to take like 30 types of medicine every morning.
Yeah, like and it still occasionally gets inflammation.
Well, the thing is, like, just to live another day.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what, you know, this is like a monster that's being constantly injected and taking pills and all these things, the political equivalents of that, just to keep walking and stay alive. Eventually, it's going to need life support. And where are they going to get that life support from? Because honestly, it's the other way around. Most of Western Europe and NATO is on life support from America. And if that goes away, so does this liberal, nationalistic, mutant, messianic, Zionist, whatever the fuck that, this monstrosity is.
Yeah, that, like,
that will go with the, that will go into the garbage.
To me, it's all just a rearguard action to just protect the power structure. Like, they'll do whatever they need to. Like, if they need to. Okay, so here's Mearsheimer's, Mearsheimer's view of this is like he's got like a why leaders lie. I'm trying to find that list that Alex was talking about. So I found one listicle, but it wasn't it. Anyway, it's you can look that we can look that up later, and maybe you'll talk about foreign policy realism and those guys more. Because there's also funny now the response to them is typical, which is that they are cynical, that they are willing to give the game away. Like they don't care about ideals. They're not. They don't understand that America is an ideal. America is.
Yeah.
And they also get accused of relativism, where they treat America and Russia like morally equal opponents involved in a struggle for. And I'm like, I actually agree with you that America and Russia are not morally equal opponents.
Nope. In not for the reasons you think
world supremacy, but it's just the exact opposite view.
Yeah.
But from the perspective, but I can understand why you would take this sort of objective view.
Yeah.
Right. Because basically what it is.
They have to speak to. Yeah.
And what it's really funny is because when we were watching that Monk debate, one of the recommended videos was the Ayn Rand Institute. Like attacking two Jews from the Ayn Rand Institute, because the Ayn Rand Institute is totally Jewish. I don't know how much influence they have, but it's not nothing. And it's almost like it's there just to keep people intrigued with that stuff or whatever. But there's these two Jews, and the funniest thing about the Ayn Rand is that most libertarians are at least right on foreign policy and war stuff. That they're consistent with our views on that, but. The Randians are just like these lunatic fucking mass murdering neocons. Like,
yeah.
They want to like nuke everybody. And, and it's like, so they're attacking. It's really funny that objectivists are attacking two scholars who actually take a relatively objective view of this.
Yeah.
The problem is though, that
that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Their shit breaks down. Yeah. Oh, when 9/11 happened, Leonard Peikoff, who was like Ayn Rand's successor, said we should just like nuke like the entire Middle East except for Israel.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean that's but it's just stupid shit. But like, Leonard Peikoff, he's Jewish. Yeah. He's like beyond Jewish. Yeah, but it's really funny because it's like the same accusations that were made when people would that I remember being made against anti-war. Movement people for the first Iraq war is like you're engaging in relativism, you're treating America and Iraq as if they're equal players here, and it's like, you know, taking that view, that's just like unacceptable to them. And it's and it's sort of like, because, but the thing is, you would think if you're actually running a country and you have a risk of military conflict with rival powers,
right,
you would need somebody capable of taking themselves out of it and objectively assessing the situation.
Yes.
And I would say like almost all rulers and ruling classes have had such people.
Yeah.
But our ruling class
doesn't have that.
Ostracizes people that try to do that. Like
that live in reality. And like we said,
for this country. Because they don't want America going. They're Jewish or part Jewish. They don't want America going away. They like it here, and they're like, we would like to be the prestigious foreign policy analyst that gives you the objective truth.
There are a few things that need to be taken for granted that always lead to wrong conclusions. One of them is blank slateism as an ideology in terms of race and understanding. Because, integrating a racial – it doesn't have to be the whole thing. But integrating race and general intelligence trends, general trends of intelligence and culture and anthropology, those things are very important when understanding why, you know, Haiti can't have a stable government.
Right.
But that's not on the table with any geopolitical analyst. So that's off the table.
Or anything else.
Already you're behind. And then you have the idea that other countries have interests just like the United States does.
Oh, yeah. You can't acknowledge that they do. Their interests are just evil. Like, spheres of influence. They hate that. Spheres of influence. Just the idea that Ukraine's in Russia's backyard, so we should not mess around there, right?
Yeah.
That's the most obvious one. Like, okay, this country is right next to Russia.
Their argument is, well, that's what Hitler would say.
So what?
Right.
My argument is he was right too. You
don't get an answer to the so what, because at that point, then you lost your job.
At that point, you just your mic gets cut and you get dragged. Dragged out of the room.
But eventually, eventually the real world will catch up to you, and it's catching up to them now. They could put us all in prison if they want. They could They could fight a three-front war if they want. They could do whatever they want, and they're going to get a bad result because they're dealing with bad theory, bad strategy, and they simply cannot discuss the world as it is.
Yeah, because
so that's why America is going to collapse.
And it seems like the idea that we have had, or maybe have had in the past, that they possibly had the ability to do it themselves, amongst themselves behind the scenes, I'm increasingly in doubt if that's the case.
Someone is saying, by the way, that the shooter, the Mexican shooter in the school, is a tranny.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll have to get verification on that, but it wouldn't surprise me. That would just, so now we have, this is just,
it's pretty intersectional here. This is a trans, holy shit, this is a transsexual.
It has to be. You got a link that you could send here?
Jazz Hands posted it on Telegram.
Oh my God. So send me the link.
It looks to be a tranny that's having tons and tons of surgeries.
Oh my God. Maybe this is the moment we need to finally break the implying that this, well, you know, it's funny. It's like, this is going to be far more
this is going to animate everyone more than
the people of this country are going to be way more animated by this than the other.
I sent it to you on Telegram.
And are you sending me on Telegram?
Yeah. This is a tranny that's had its Adam's apple removed.
Oh my God. That is okay. Here I've got Jazz Hands Telegram up here. This is 15 dead in Texas, 14 children, one teacher. Shooter was Salvador Ramos killed in the shootout. Appears to have been some sort of tranny undergoing various cosmetic surgeries. Oh, my God. Hold on. Let me get these images downloaded. Yeah.
There's no guarantee it's a tranny, but it sure looks
like it. It looks like some crazy person. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. The thing is, it'll have to only ever be inferred, because I don't think it will ever be acknowledged.
No.
If true. But, like, look at this individual. This is the person. Okay, let me move that down a bit. Yeah, that's Salvador Ramos.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does at least look like it could be just an effeminate dude who's playing that up. But yeah, the Adam's apple looks fucking weird, dude.
And it's got the lips. The lips are fake. It's got
this one is like less
like clear. Blowjob.
Definitely, lips. I would think that was an ugly woman if I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I also wonder if the social media now is something that, because these are an Instagram picture.
Yep.
So it will be clear. Because if this person is a tranny, it will be all over their social media, how they're talking about all the stuff that they're getting done.
Yeah. And in Texas, they'll blame the political establishment for passing laws and stuff about stuff. It's the laws that, by the way, keep getting overturned. Like, I don't know if you saw the social media law that DeSantis passed. That shit got overturned by a court, by an appeals court. And I think that in was it Wyoming? It was one of those states. The courts overturned. Maybe Texas. They overturned
the law banning
hormones. Which, by the way, in Sweden, and as Bill Maher said, in Sweden and in other Nordic progressive countries, they actually have banned puberty blockers for kids. Like, that's not even controversial there. They can have a more open
they
debate.
They have a lot of stuff there, in those countries that made more sense health-wise than America did for a long
time.
Like, they actually had functional health systems, for one.
Right.
For a long time, they had functional health systems.
Yes.
Of course, you know, that's, you know, when you have a small country of homogeneous Nordic people, you can have...
Well, not anymore, but...
Well, that's what I mean. That was exactly the point I was arriving at.
Yeah.
Is that, like, when you have that, when you have, like, Norway had, like, 6 million people, Sweden had, like, 10 million people... And these are like all like high functioning white people. Like,
well, what I don't understand, and some of it's on purpose, obviously, because the Republicans and conservatives are meant to lose. But why don't they just do what the other side does and just ignore their criticisms and just hyper politicize this if it's a tranny? Because they can't do it on race. But
the Republicans are meant to lose on certain things, and they're meant to win. Yeah. On other things, there's a type I could envision. Well, the problem is though that the kinds of like, if somebody was like, they didn't even really do it when that guy who was just a libtard went and shot like Steve Scalise.
Yeah,
they kind of did with that one though. They did that. They did with that one more.
Well, I had to
than almost any other because that was actually because I was about to say. Well, I could see them doing it if it was like someone who's literally just a Democrat. And they shot people for being Republicans, but then that happened.
Yeah.
And it was the guy that shot Steve Scalise, and they did kind of make a stink out of it.
They did, yes.
So that's the only way, I think that they would be exploitative.
So this is what this is what the shooter looked like before. It does look like he's had some work done.
Yeah, I mean, look, it wouldn't surprise me.
I don't know. It's. I mean, are there any Zoomers that aren't trannies or pansexual or fucking or fucked up, sexually fucked up in some way? Even the right wing ones.
Yeah, no, they really are.
So I don't know, but yeah.
Okay, so this is what the kid. So I've got a picture here. This is the kid. I think this is like some shot of recently. I don't know. That could just be like
that looks game. Before.
Yeah, that like, looks just like shot. That looks like a police shot though. It looks like a mugshot.
That's
like,
very true. How much do you want to bet this person has been in a mental facility?
Yes, that I'm willing to bet this person is under some. That this person is taking some psychiatric medications.
Or that he's been under and just like the Buffalo shooter who was in a mental facility, they knew there was something wrong with him and just couldn't do anything about it. Just like we talked about. Yeah. I mean that's the new pandemic. Is extreme forms of violent mental illness that are not being addressed.
Yeah. And it's like really violent. Like it's just insanely violent mental illness.
No.
So what does Heavy have to say? Typically they get stuff and they're like give listicles on like what we know about the shooting. So yeah, this wasn't anything to do with immigration status, it appears.
No.
This says it's just a mass shooting by a lunatic. Possible sexual deviant of some kind. Maybe he's just gay or maybe who knows, but it's just like Yeah, so this is like there's something really gay about this picture.
Yeah, his face.
His face, his stance, everything about it.
It's very gay.
But then, you know, this one, you know, this picture here was that. Yeah. This looks kind of like a normal beaner, like fairly average beaner, but maybe, you know.
Yeah.
But who knows?
I don't know, but either way, yeah, this is a Let's see how this plays out.
We'll see what happens. I'm not making any pronunciation. I'll say that guy looks like a fucking weird fag. I'll just say that. That's my visceral impression, but we'll have to find out more. But they'll cover it up. But it'll come out. Even if they try to cover it up, it'll come out. Because if people have his Instagram, you better believe the Chans and everybody else and Telegram is pouring over that crap and anything like that. They're going to find
it. Well, this is something that like national conservatives will actually go and jump on. It's this one. If it's a tranny.
Could be. If it's a tranny.
They will get on top of this.
Yeah, they probably will. The Republican Party generally won't want to, but they will possibly be dragged kicking and screaming into at least saying something. Or at the very least, what it will be is it will be like the know you thing.
Yeah.
For if they try and
That'll work too.
Well, I mean, the thing is, that's probably like the best you can get. It's like, but certainly the one thing I'll say is that this absolutely puts lie to the fact that the epidemic and of course, nobody actually really believed it. That's the other funny thing. Nobody really believes it, that the epidemic in America is white supremacist violence.
Nope.
The only people that actually believe that. Or feel motivated by it. They don't believe they feel motivated by it. Are libtards, are Jews, and like libtard butt goys, or like gays and trannies and people like that, who feel politically threatened by the concepts of white nationalism. Yes. And they're the ones that will feel alarmed.
They just do what they just want to arrest their opposition.
Right, but they just
like
they
any
just
other.
And they also know that this is something probably more so than even a lot of white nationalists or even conservatives and libertarians know how the potential for it to take off.
Yeah.
Like they on some level know, everybody in this country like hates us.
Yeah.
And that's not just the white people.
Yeah.
And you would probably there are probably like the NJP platform, there are probably groups of like Mexicans or Arabs or other non-white groups or whatever in America that would happily just come with us rather than the fucking people
that over
in power. Like they'd be like, yeah, this is way better.
That's how bad things are being
run. We also
run
don't talk
every
about any intention of abusing any people. So it's purely
what's the point of that?
Yeah. There's no reason for that.
There's no reason for it.
Yeah. The only thing is it's like, and also a ton of those groups probably are also like, yeah, we don't want America to not be majority white either. That's why we came here.
Right.
Because it was majority white. That's why it was a desirable place to come to. Now there's no reason.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's not, America's not a desirable place to come anymore. I mean, they're still coming.
Yeah.
There's like direct incentives for them to do it. But they're going to be they're going to get buyer's remorse. You know, they're going to get some buyer, like, what, at some
point
a Mexican's going to illegally immigrate to America and be like, oh, it's, you know, like, no different.
Yo, there's like provinces in Mexico that are arguably whiter than California. Right. I'm not even joking.
Well, but it's not even just that. It's just like, at some point, it's just not going to be different. Like, you're going to be like, I'm now in America goggles. Everything looks the same.
Well, like, what is the difference between San Antonio and Northern Mexico is, despite being super violent because of the cartels, it's still relatively sophisticated compared to like the rest of Mexico, because it's just more white.
Like the Yucatan.
And yeah,
still like Indians out there, yeah.
But, you know, is there really that much of a difference between the Mexican highlands and where people, they have like a middle class there and stuff, and San Antonio?
Right.
Is there really that much of a difference? I don't think so. Or New Mexico or any of those other places over there, you know, is there much of a difference between Albuquerque and parts of northern Mexico? No, not really. In fact, parts of northern Mexico are probably safer. That's why like this whole thing of like first world versus third world is becoming far more ambiguous now as Western countries change demographically and become poor. It's much more ambiguous than it used to be. I mean, so like framing things in that context, which was a Cold War context. And by the way, one last thing about first world versus third world. The United States has always been a third worldist power. Going back to the Haitian Revolution, John Adams sent the U.S. Navy to help the fucking Haitians murder and rape thousands and thousands of French women, white women and children. So America has always been an exporter of this as well, of this type of Bolshevism. Now, I believe it was Jefferson put an end to it after he saw like the sheer atrocities the Haitian revolutionaries were doing to the white people. And by the way, even the white people that supported the Haitians were brutally murdered.
Of course. Yeah. They murdered the mulattoes, dude.
Yeah. So, and the United States enabled that.
Yeah.
The United States enabled all that. So, you know, that whole thing of like people trying to bring this style of like we were just talking about liberal nationalism and framing things as first world versus third, those people are lying, or they're living in a fantasy.
Talking about how like if you're rooting,
they're lying, or a fantasy world.
Yeah, like that Russia is like the third worldist power. It's
Are you fucking kidding me? Please. But show me a picture of Russian elites.
Well, the other thing with all of that stuff is that those people always just assign categories. They never make an argument.
Yeah.
They never talk of, they never
describe what they're for. What are they for?
They never describe the essence of what's going on.
They always hide what they support in the positive.
Right.
So we know what they don't support.
Right.
I mean, what do you support? Like, oh, no, I'm an anti-Zionist because of slave morality or because of third world. Okay. So what are you for? Are you for Israel? I mean, Gavin McInnes says yes.
Gavin McInnes wants to be a Nazi for Israel.
Yes, but he's honest in that sense that he's saying what he actually thinks. These other people, these clowns, the Telegram trolls and stuff that say shit like that, say shit that's halfway to where Gavin McInnes is. They're too cowardly to tell you what they really think.
Well, the thing about Gavin is, what Gavin says, and of course he said it in defense of Jews.
Yeah.
And I made a post about this on Telegram in response to the post he made, where he said the idea of like the great replacement and like it's the Jews or whatever. He's like, this is wrong. He's like, it's actually like white people, particularly white women,
yes,
that are doing this. And then
that's so cowardly.
And then he said, I have no idea. Let me read the post itself. It's I've got it on Telegram.
Well, yeah, you said it best. You have no problem categorizing people. It's just don't do it to the people that actually are in power.
Yeah. So it says Gavin. So it says white supremacist conspiracy theory. Yeah. Jews hate whites and are trying to wipe them out. via race mixing, propaganda, and commercials, etc., and open borders. Truth. One, elite whites of all stripes hate themselves and embrace their own annihilation. I can't figure out why whites are the only race with this trait. Two, white women enjoy the idea of diversity, not in practice. So the craving is fed via marketing and silly blog posts. Three, the Dems are pro-open borders because it means more votes. The demographic thing is just a side effect. They could care less about if Mexicans voted right, the border would be closed tomorrow. That's retarded.
And objectively, shown to be
not true and objectively retarded. And also, Gavin might not know it. Maybe not. But here's
my thing. These are not political decisions, as we saw with Merkel, who is a center right prime minister running a ostensibly conservative party. Mm-hmm. None of the millions of migrants, the vast majority of the millions of migrants that entered Germany, support the Green Party.
Right.
They don't support the CDU.
Yeah.
So that is that has been objectively proven. In fact, conservatives are often the ones that give the amnesties, like Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Didn't seal any sort of non-European or immigrant vote for Republicans or.
Yeah, hey, no, I mean, it's also like it doesn't, like I said,
it's nonsense. It's to avoid what you're really mad about, which is that.
Well, it's to protect Jews. I mean, it's objectively the first thing he objects to is the fact that people are blaming Jews. But what I said, though, is when you think about number one, he says elite whites of all stripes hate themselves and endorse their own annihilation. I can't figure out why whites are the only race with this trait. Well, my answer to Gavin was, well, Gavin, here's one way that you can maybe try and figure it out. Ask yourself why you do it.
Why you do it. That's a great...
Why do you do it, Gavin? Because I'll tell you what.
It's the same incentive.
Same reason.
Yes.
You do it for the same reason you're sucking up to Jews. It's the same fucking reason they do it.
They do it, yes.
You're doing the same thing. Because this post is an attack on whites.
If they really hated themselves, why don't they send their kids to school with these
people? If they really hated themselves, why is it that he says they enjoy the idea of diversity but not in reality?
Right.
Because they don't really want to be like raped for 5 days in a warehouse near Fordham University. Right. No one really wants that.
Right. They don't want to be stabbed like that girl at NYU in Morningside Heights.
To go to Fordham University and get a degree and get a prestigious job.
Right. That's why they're there.
Right. But so, like that girl, and Gavin, yes. What Gavin wants is to desperately be a relevant guy with a radio show or an internet show backwards.
Well, he wants to get his job. But remember, he says he's defending Jews here, but you know, Mark Levin, who was doing CRT TV or whatever it's called. Remember that failed venture?
Yeah.
Well, he fired Gavin because the SPLC wrote a hit piece on him.
Yeah, he fired Gavin because
Jewish conservative.
Too adjacent to actually anti-Jewish stuff.
Right. And the SPLC wrote about it and his own conservative boss fired.
Ezra Levant fired Faith Goldie. Remember when Faith Goldie and Gavin did their little thing where they said how much we love Israel? Well, both of you were fired by Jews.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Both of you were fired by Jews for getting too close to white nationalists.
We need to come up with a name for this. It's Stockholm syndrome, but we've got to call it
Tel
Aviv syndrome.
where
Jews hit you.
Jerusalem syndrome or something.
Jerusalem syndrome.
But it's like Gavin, it's really funny because you say, because basically, think about how much you're laboring under your own premise. You're falling under your own wheel, right? You're getting crushed by your own wheel. Like you're talking about how you know, it's really dumb. These guys that are pro-white are stupid because white people hate themselves. It's like, I know this because I'm white and I hate myself. It's just like, it's like, Gavin, are you against this or not? Like, cause the way you would sort of, you know, I do this too, cause sometimes you get guys who are actually pro-white that do get black-pilled and start talking like this. And I always say
they get that shit from conservatives.
Get that stuff from conservatism and from cowards, from people that want to say edgy stuff, maybe even kind of racist stuff. And maybe they want to talk about trannies. They want to talk about black
Crowder,
things like that.
McGinnis Crowder.
But they'll always resort to, well, it's actually that white people are like hating themselves. And it's you know, Gavin is like more had more was more adjacent to us in back in the day.
For sure.
He's like more
different times
aware of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So he's got more direct contact with actual anti-Semites, people directly telling you it's Jews. Yes. Crowder never did that, right? He's always just been like this buffoon. But like, it's just really funny because it's like, it's almost like, you know, but in a way it's sort of like Gavin doesn't bother to differentiate himself. from those other. He's like, yeah, like as an elite white person or aspirational wanting to be an elite white person, here I'm going to attack. Except his way is attacking white nationalism under the guise. It's a really funny thing. It's like you shouldn't be a white nationalist because white people are stupid and hate themselves and attack themselves. That's why I'm attacking you for being pro-white.
Well, I'll say this.
It's like the whole thing.
Has that ever existed in the history of humanity, or is it more common that a population that is self-hating like that, or that has elite self-haters, is actually because they have traitors that are cherry-picked from their population to rule them?
Right. Well, just the question is like, traitors, whenever they say
minority
like,
of traitors that don't represent the majority, they are cherry-picked. They are given shit tests where they say a woman is a man, where they say blacks are violent because of white supremacy, where they say all these things. These are all these shit tests to guarantee that only traitors and literally the mentally ill are allowed to have any position of any type in any institution. That is what it is. And you know what? Gavin McInnes himself, he has
this happened to him too.
He is a beneficiary of this, but because he's on the right, it's far more precarious.
Well,
So he kind of stepped out of line a little bit, and that's why he lost
everything. And ever since he did that, like, he became pathetic. Yep. And like groveling, and the way he talks about this stuff, and then he gets defensive about it, and he says stuff this, like, "You white nationalists are so stupid, like white people." But I'm like, all right, well, if that's true, then why not? Why are you mad? Like, why don't you just
why
watch
say
me?
That?
Like, why don't you just like why are you working against me? Because like, why not just if it's true what you're saying, we have no chance of winning.
Oh yeah, because they
just watch me fail and laugh.
Remember
right?
The pitch they all make before. They get canceled by Jews. What's the last pitch Gavin can say? No, if you cancel me, the Nazis will get all the audience.
That's true. That's like the last. That's the last refuge of the
every one of them, from Gavin McInnes to Fuentes to all of them. They all make the same point as they hang off the cliff and their fingers are slipping and 11 is stepping on their fingers. They're like, if you let me die.
Mark Levin
will rise.
And Ezra Levant are like bashing their fingers with rocks to get them to fall off the cliff. And they're like, without me.
Yeah.
Without me.
Your enemies will throw you off the cliff.
Yeah. My thing is, at that point, why not just hope that they do it?
That's why.
Why not
why
just
need,
hope that
that's
they
why
do
we
it?
Need
like,
a
where
word
comes
for,
this instinct? Now, one thing
for
is
this
weird.
Mental illness called that's stock a weird specific form of
this
Stockholm syndrome.
This is something that should be analyzed. Is where does this come from? And I think
where does
it might
this feeling
be,
come from?
It might be a certain internalization of anti-whiteness. It might be a certain certainty that it's true. White people can't ever take over. But the problem is, it's like what they can do is make Gavin's life more difficult. But they can't really take over, but they can make his life – like he wants to just make edgy jokes and have everything be – and have like a comedy show and have fun by like trolling libtards and whatever. Mm-hmm. And here come us like, you know, the Jews are running America. And he's like, stop. Shut up.
Yeah.
Like, you're ruining my gig.
I got to get going. I'm a little tired.
Yeah,
so.
I think Sven's stream might be starting now.
The monkey.
Sure. I didn't look at what time he was doing it.
You
got the monkeypox. Were you recently in the Netherlands? Where was this monkeypox?
All right, I'm gonna come clean. So Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates, and they noticed my shilling for the vaccine, and they invited me to human simian orgy. All right, okay. So yeah, I've been caught.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
There you go. I'm caught. Oh, it's over. TRS is controlled opposition.
Yes.
Someone is now saying, see, I just read, this is an international headline, 20 people dead in a drug raid in Brazil on the same day that, but look at the difference. Like it's the same problems that these countries have. We have the same problems plus nihilism.
Yeah.
Okay, because like killing someone for drugs is nihilistic in a sense, but it's a lot more nihilistic to shoot up a school.
But I thought this was, you said a drug raid. Was this the police?
In Rio, in Brazil.
So
20
police,
people have died, yes.
And the cops and the drug gang got in a shootout and 20 people died. Well, at least they were trying.
Right, exactly. That's true. That's definitely
at
true.
At least they were trying, right?
But you can see. Here. But you know, I really do want to stress because this is how they play to your This is how they develop your jingoism as a chess piece. Is that they play to your idea, especially Americans that don't own a passport, that there is some sort of distinction between a place like Brazil and the United States when there actually is not.
There's not.
There's not.
Rural Brazil is
nicer
white
than
and
urban
also very
America.
Safe.
Yes, southern Brazil is objectively nicer than
what
much
is the
of
difference
America.
Between a favela
right.
and like a
and
no
Detroit.
Go zone in an American city.
And when we're talking about no-go zones, we're talking about like entire swaths of New York
yeah,
City
I
and
would
Baltimore.
Bet, I actually think
the entire city of Baltimore.
A favela is probably
St. Louis.
Safer.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, yeah, but, right.
but you know, let's, either way, they're filled with like mixed race and black criminals
yeah.
just going crazy, right? So
yep.
yeah,
yep, indeed. All right, so I got yeah. Let's play us out, my friend.
Play us out. What do you
yes.
mean, play us out? No. All right. So, yeah. Anyway, we'll talk to you guys in a week. And just more of this rhetoric all week on TRS. I'm going to do more of that foreign policy realism stuff tomorrow. We only stumbled upon
good.
It at the end of the show. But yeah.
Sounds good.
All right. Okay. Huh.